Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Good afternoon, folks. Each week I do my show, and each week it is easier and easier to get stuff to talk about. I remember when I used to have to get stuff from the whole week starting to look for stuff right after I finished my show on Friday and going all the way through to the next Friday and working on it to get stuff for the week. Now I don't have to do that. The liberal even a three-hour show is easy to do anymore. The liberal left is intent on giving us as much fodder to talk about as they can, and they do it. They are intent on destroying this nation, and they have succeeded so much that there are few around these days who could actually call this nation what it is, a constitutional republic. I call it that. Mark Levin calls it that. Dan Bongino calls it that. But most everyone else, even those on our side, call us a democracy. We are not. We are a constitutional republic. Even the founding fathers bickered over this one, and they decided against being a democracy because it was nothing more than mob rule, as I have said on this show and on my updates many, many times. We are a constitutional republic, and right now our republic is in trouble. We have nominees for the Supreme Court who couldn't answer basic questions like, what is a woman? And yet they still get the position they are nominated for. Right now, we have a federal magistrate whose name is Cato Cruz, who has been nominated to be a judge by Joe Basement Dweller Biden. And Cato Cruz cannot answer a simple question that for most first-year law students is not a hard question. But they're taught this already in their first year. And this is supposed to be a federal magistrate, and he doesn't know. My clip from Dan Bongino show yesterday talked to this one. The clip is a little long, and because Dan Bongino leads up to this, I will go ahead and do my intro for my show, and I will get right to that as soon as I'm back. I will talk to you in a few.
But what we saw in that Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans who apparently have no option to.
Show me where it says that protest is supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
They go low, he kicks.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. So even if he lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said we're in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially, and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding. This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
Hello, Sarge. Good to have you here. I started the show by talking about how this country is not a democracy. Everybody, even Rush Limbaugh, call it a democracy for the most part. But we are not. We're a constitutional republic. But this republic, as Dan Bongino said yesterday, is in trouble. This clip that I have is a little long because Dan Bongino leads up to this, but it is worth listening to because if history tells us anything, Ted Cruz may get the job he is nominated for. And he probably will because he's black. But give a listen to this, and Dan Bongino explains what's going on, but I put the whole clip in there, so it makes it a little bit... there's a lot in there, but listen to what Ted Cruz says at the end, and this is really something.
Here's the next shoe to drop, by the way. Read this piece by John Solomon. The House Judiciary Committee is probing whether D.C. Democrats intervened to pressure Twinkies to charge Trump. Oh, boy. That could be a problem. That could be a real problem, especially considering the Department of Justice decided not to prosecute this case against Trump because they knew it was what, fellas? A dog. A dog. Now, as I said to you yesterday, I'm very concerned about our republic, and you should be too. You need two things for social revolution. And I don't mean this revolution in any kind of a qualitatively positive way. I'm talking about societies collapsing and violence in the street. You need two things for that to happen, generally speaking. Whether it's just, I mean, imagine it, the worst possible scenario. Neighbor against neighbor, no police, civil war in the streets. Imagine that. Horrible, right? You're never going to get there in a prosperous country like the United States without two things. Number one, faith in institutions collapsing. People don't do this stuff because they're afraid of the police and being arrested. They're afraid of a military crackdown or the FBI investigating them. That's a good thing. We don't want civil war in the streets. You want people killing their neighbors, obviously. I mean, does that even require us saying that? But you have faith in institutions, and you believe, like, your neighbor's not going to come after you either, even if they're a Democrat and you're a Republican, because we have laws. And we have what? Faith in institutions. When you see societal upheavals, people lose faith in institutions. Oh, the FBI isn't going to protect me. Matter of fact, not only are they not going to protect me, they're going to target me because I'm a MAGA supporter. That's happening now. I just described to you how nobody has any faith in this justice system anymore. New York City, you're a sitting duck if you're a conservative. Why you'd stay there is beyond me. The second part you need is not just faith in institutions collapsing. You need economic collapse because you need to make people desperate. Once they're desperate, only four missed meals away from chaos, right? That's the old line. Civilization's a thin crust on a volcano, right? It's been said before. Once you get to economic collapse, you've got this witch's brew for dangerous societal upheaval. Folks, it's happening right now. You've got this perfect storm going on right now as the Fed raised rates again yesterday, 25 basis points. The economy is teetering on an edge that broke after the podcast yesterday. We have a lot of trouble. But back to the faith in institutions part in a second. This has been a multi-day part. This, I've been covering these over the last couple of days, and I'm very worried about it. You want to see why faith in institutions is collapsing? Well, you're probably saying to yourself, oh, well, you know what? Even if Twinkies indicts them, our institutions will hold, Joe. You know, we got courts. We got judges. I mean, judges are just, you know, guys and ladies in black robes, and they're not partisan at all, and they know the law, and they understand the law, and they'll back us up. Of course, that got thrown out of the way with January 6th, where guys have been sitting in gulags for 2 years, despite habeas corpus. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they've had initial appearances, but they've been kept in prison for absolutely absurd, absurd reasons. Nobody has faith in the judicial system anymore. People are losing it. How do you expect to get a fair trial as a conservative in front of this guy? Let me introduce you to a man named Cato Cruz, who is being nominated for a court seat by Joe Biden. He is a federal magistrate now. He's asked a pretty simple question about Brady material. Brady material. You know, like we've been discussing for the last 3 weeks and everyone else has been discussing in the media. It's evidence of a defendant's innocence that's not presented to him, i.e. the SEC letter from Michael Cohen's lawyer to the SEC about the payment Donald Trump didn't make, according to the letter. Brady material is a concept taught to a law enforcement officer and a 101 law student in college. This is not a complicated thing. So a federal magistrate, you guys think they know a little bit about Brady material? It's like asking Joe, Joe, you know anything about processing sound? No, no, nothing. You want to be the sound engineer? I'll figure it out. We're actually looking for someone with some skills. Listen to this. Here's Cato Cruz responding to Senator John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana, who asked him a simple question. What's Brady material? Check this out.
Tell me how you analyze a Brady motion.
How I analyze a Brady motion?
Yes.
Senator, in my 4.5 years on the bench, don't believe I've had the occasion to address a Brady motion in my career.
Do you know what a Brady motion is?
Senator, in my time on the bench, I've not had occasion to address that, and so it's not coming to mind at the moment what a Brady motion is.
Do you recall the U.S. Supreme Court case, Brady v. Maryland?
I do recall the name of the case, Senator, yes.
And what did it hold?
I believe that the Brady case Senator, I believe the Brady case involves something regarding the Second Amendment. It is not, I have not had occasion to address that. If that issue were to come before me, I would certainly analyze that Supreme Court precedent and apply it as I would need to the facts in front of me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're a federal magistrate who confuses the Brady v. Maryland case. Again, a case taught to a first-day FLETC student training to become a TIGTA agent for the IRS. Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, FLETC, they call it. You're confusing one of the most important cases in American history, Brady v. Maryland, with the Brady bill? He told you Brady v. Maryland. You don't even know what it is? That's like not understanding the significance of Marbury versus Madison. Folks, this is embarrassing.
Yeah, and it's just like Dan Bongino said, this is embarrassing. But the thing that will be really embarrassing is if this man gets to be what he is being nominated to be. It is just as embarrassing as having that woman who was nominated to be a Supreme Court justice who couldn't answer the question, what is a woman? And yet she got it anyway. That is what will be embarrassing if this guy gets what he was at, he has been nominated. And it's just like Sarge says, well, at least he probably won't misgender or dead name a defendant. Well, we can always hope. He's a liberal. He may just do that. But you know, he says he might not just he might just ensure that evidence that could catapult him will not be admitted at trial. And this, my friends, is sick. And everything that Biden is doing nowadays is sick. Biden nominated this man. This man doesn't know a thing. I could be a better justice than this man will be. And I won't try for it because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I know right from wrong, but I don't know the laws like he is supposed to. And I have so much in today's stack of stuff, as Rush always called it, about the things that Biden's doing, the things that Democrats here in New Mexico are doing. Democrats here in New Mexico, the smugglers who are trying to bring sneak illegals into New Mexico are now using WhatsApp to sneak illegals into New Mexico. And, you know, that isn't all. We have another one where a new Albuquerque abortion facility that has started has a starting goal of killing 75 babies weekly. How sick can you be? And all of this is stuff that, 20, 30 years ago, we might think would be good stuff to put into a novel of future stupidity. And we're seeing it happen daily. We're seeing it happen all the time. And this Trump grand jury thing. These things are just absolutely driving me insane. The Democrats are now saying that they may just go after the judiciary to push the grand jury into doing an indictment. Well, the bad part about that is, just as Bongino said, the judiciary had it in the first place. The feds had it in the first place. They wouldn't do anything with it because it was such a dog of a case. It was such a weak case. They couldn't see pushing it, so they didn't. Now the Democrats are trying to push it back to them. I think this thing's dead. But they're doing everything they can to destroy this country from the nominations that Biden and the Democrats are putting into our justice system to the Democrats trying to push illegality into our legal system. It's driving me insane, folks. The stuff that I have in my thing for today is just amazing. The first one I wanted to put out here because it actually shows how big of a buffoon Biden is. And they had a thing on KKOB here, which is the conservative talk station here in town. And they had people calling in to discuss the things they want to. And this guy called in with a joke. And he said, what is the difference between the roundhouse, which is our legislature here in New Mexico, what is the difference between the roundhouse in Santa Fe and a circus? And the answer to that one was, at least in a circus, the clowns don't speak. I thought that was good because it essentially describes the whole left in this country right now, and sadly, many on the right. The story that I wanted to read first off was, the headline came from Western Journal. It said, White House forced to make hilarious edit to Biden transcript after he made stunning mistake. Well, this is nothing new. His stunning mistakes keep getting stunninger and stunninger all the time. And they keep saying, I don't know why he's saying that. Well, I can tell exactly why he's saying that, because he's stupid. He is losing his mind. He doesn't have the mental capacity right now to run this country, but they're making him do it. He's saying, oh, I can do this. I've done so much good for this country. We have gotten 10 trillion new jobs, and the economy is going great guns, according to him. I see the difference, because when he went into office here in Albuquerque, our gas was $1.49 a gallon. Going up, but it was $1.49 a gallon. It started to go up as soon as the Democrats claimed he won the presidency. It's now almost $3.50 a gallon now, or $3.55 a gallon now. It went back down to about $2.98, something like that, a few weeks ago. And about that same time, Biden was saying, oh, we're bringing down gas prices. No, since then, they've gone back up again. And at the rate they're going up, it's going to hit $4 a gallon here before we know it. And in California, it's already over $6, so heading towards $7. Yeah, he might not ensure that evidence that could acquit him would not be admitted in his trial. I already read that one. I'm glad to see Sarge is in there, because he calls into Vince's show on Saturday a lot, and he has such wisdom that it helps me when I'm doing my show, especially when I get going on the topic that he wants to talk about. And he usually helps all kinds of things. But in this story about the hilarious edit to Biden, during his comments meant to celebrate Women's History Month, makes me think, do they have a Men's History Month? No, of course not. President Joe Biden delivered such a wild gaffe that the White House had to doctor the official transcript of the event to paper it over. During the Wednesday reception appearance alongside Vice President Kamala Harris, First Lady Jill Biden, and Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, Biden was going on about things he thinks he has achieved as president when he put his foot in his mouth once again. His foot, he's got to know what his foot tastes like by now. Amidst this list of purported achievements, Biden, who is a major gaffer, tried to make a point about how he has made the country safer from guns, but boy, did he botch the line. After being interrupted by applause in the room, which is kind of weird, Biden then said, but this builds on other steps you've taken and we've taken, like the most significant gun safety law in 30 years to help keep guns out of the hands of, to keep the guns out of the hands of domestic political advisors. And then the article goes on to say, wait, what? He kept guns out of the hands of domestic political advisors? Yes, that is what he said. Hilariously, he just kept on rambling without the first clue that he had just screwed it all up. But if you read the official White House transcript of the evening's remarks, they were forced to make just a tiny correction, and this time they crossed out Biden's gaffe and added in what he was supposed to have said. As Twitter user Greg Price noted, Biden said yesterday that he worked to keep guns out of the hands of domestic political advisors, and the White House was forced to make a hilarious edit to their transcript, ha ha. You think, and then the article asked the question, do you think Biden is becoming a national security concern? And my answer to that one is, becoming? He's been a national concern since he first set foot in the White House under Obama. But it turns out Biden was supposed to say his administration worked to keep guns out of the hands convicted domestic abusers. But he just couldn't read his giant teleprompter. At least he didn't deliver another off-the-cuff story that is patently false like he usually does. Biden was having quite a battle with his teleprompter that evening, The Republican National Committee posted several short video clips of tongue-tied Joe. Sadly, this isn't the first time that the White House has had to make an allowance for Biden's gaffe-making, and they wouldn't do this for Trump or for Bush or for Reagan or any other person who was part of the Republican Party. Remember the time when the Twin Towers were brought down and they showed President Bush in a classroom talking to the students, and somebody came up and whispered in his ear that it happened. He didn't say anything for a few seconds. Do you remember how the media lambasted him for not saying anything for those few seconds? I remember that. To me, it looked like he was thinking of what to say. Now, a Democrat can do exactly that same thing. Halt for a few seconds, look totally lost, you know, and Trump, but Bush never looked lost at that point in time. But Biden looks lost 99% of the time. Nobody says a word about this. And Sarge says, if those advisors are demon rats, then I agree with Senile Joe that they should be kept away from any kind of gun. Yeah, I agree too. But to name just a few examples of them making allowance for Biden's gaffe-making, to name just a few examples, in April of 2022, during his comments about the funding he was requesting for Ukraine, Biden delivered such a jumble of guttural sounds that the transcript had to correct him to make him more intelligible. Just this year, he botched the name of a pair of rivers in the American Southwest. He was apparently not briefed ahead of time on how to pronounce the Gila and the Washoe rivers, pronounced Gila, H-E-L-U-H, and Washoe, W-A-S-H-O, is the way they got it pronounced, respectively. And during his comments to the National Association of Counties Legislative Conference in Washington in February, he made a hash out of both names, and it was transcript to the rescue again. Biden isn't alone in having mouth problems. Late September, Vice President Kamala Harris made a huge error in South Korea when, during a visit to the demilitarized zone that separates North and South Korea, she said that the U.S. shares a very important relationship with the Republic of North Korea. Of course, the official transcript papered over it and did the favor of eliminating the errant North in her speech as if it never happened. I'll tell you what. The people who are fixing his mistakes and her mistakes, I'd like to have that job. They're getting paid normally a good salary for correcting things the president usually says. Well, with this president, these people are busier than hell. But sadly, this entire administration is one gaffe after another. Some of these are just embarrassing. Others are even dangerous. This man that we've got in the White House now is destroying this country. And it's about time that we started realizing this. And I hope that when this next election comes, we get him the hell out of that office. It just has to be. And the things that they're doing to Trump right now, there's a bunch of people, Mark Levin has said it, Dershowitz has said it, that most likely what's going to happen is it's going to be a landslide for Trump because of what's going on now. But we'll just have to wait and see, because we all know now just how much the left cheats when it comes to elections. And Sarge says, yeah, they probably get one hell of a lot of overtime. Yeah, they are probably just actually dog tired at the end of the day having to work that much overtime. They probably are not very appreciated for it. But this one from New Mexico, the smugglers hire through WhatsApp and Craigslist to sneak illegals into New Mexico. This is a recent report from KXAN News, Austin, Texas, has documented multiple recent altercations at the border patrol units have had with smugglers, mostly Americans, transferring illegal aliens into New Mexico through the southern border. Now, New Mexico has just a tiny little sliver there that's part of that southern border. But in one case reported by the outlet, a black Mazda CX-5 was stopped by agents in Hidalgo County after failing to stop for a speeding violation on March 14th. The vehicle, manned by U.S. citizen Francisco Perez Mercado, sped through onto Interstate 10 until crashing into another car in Lordsburg. The migrants told investigators the smugglers charged him $8,000 to get him across the border and past highway checkpoints, reported KXAN. On February 28th, an agent stationed at the New Mexico-Arizona border spotted a passenger inside a blue Hyundai Duck, which led to questioning of the driver, U.S. citizen Gabriel Scott. He sped up amid being questioned and was later apprehended with a tire deflation device. Scott allegedly volunteered that he had picked up the migrants in Nogales, Arizona, and hid two of them in the trunk for more than 3 hours. Scott said he was recruited by smugglers through an ad on Craigslist for an undisclosed amount of money, court records show, the outlet reported. On the morning of March 16th, a Las Cruces area border patrol, and I used to live in Las Cruces, agent spotted a dark Dodge Challenger following a gold Jeep with its lights off. As the caravan approached the border patrol checkpoint, the Challenger revved past the traffic and was later apprehended on New Mexico Highway 185 about 2 miles after 2 miles of pursuit. The gold Jeep has not yet been located, but the driver of the Challenger, George Louis Fryer, told investigators he belonged to the Chuco Tango gang. And this is all happening here in New Mexico. Now they're using WhatsApp app and what's that other one I just got through mentioning? Oh, man, my mind's gone today. Craigslist to bring these people into New Mexico. And I don't know why they're doing that, because our governor, she sits up there, the Wicked Witch of the North sits up there in Santa Fe at the Roundhouse and motions them all in. She says, come on in. This state is just for you. She's bringing in illegals by the tons. She's bringing in abortion clinics by the tons. And all the counties down south that are conservative and have put up laws in their counties that say they cannot come here, she is now, with the legislature, is trying to push a bill that says they can't do that. They can't protect their counties if it goes against her ideals. The woman is Satan's spawn, if you ask me. And I remember when she got her abortion up to birth passed, she was gleeful. I mean, it was almost like she was a child who had just received the thing in life that he wanted to have more than anything else. That's how excited she was that she passed this bill to kill babies all the way up until the day of birth. This state cannot get rid of her fast enough. And now with her opening up a new abortion facility, and it's down on Lomas Boulevard. Thankfully, it's on the northwest side of town, but it's right on one of the main roads in town. The main roads in town are like running east and west or central, Lomas, Manal, Indian School, and Constitution. Those are the main ones right in the middle. And she's got this thing down at, I think it's 419 or 619 Lomas Boulevard Northwest. I'm going to go down there and take some pictures and do an update this week on that one, because that place needs to be closed up. And then this whole thing about the Trump grand jury. There was an article where they had, that I did an update just the other day, I think it was yesterday, about how they had made it so that they were going to suspend it until Monday. Well, this article came out yesterday, right after I did that. It was on the 23rd. Well, today might be the 23rd. Nope, it was yesterday, where it was a breaking report where the Trump grand jury kicks the can again, no indictment in the immediate future. Now, what they are doing here is they know that they do not have a good case against him. They know it is weak. They know they can't push the feds to do anything about it because the feds said, no, this is not going to work. We're not going to do it. And then this fancy-dancy little twink that, as Bongino calls him, Bragg, who is nothing more than a district judge or a whatever, he doesn't have the authority to do this. And yet he has such a, sorry about this, he has such a hard-on for getting Trump that he doesn't care what he does, just so long as he can get something going. But the fans and detractors of former President Donald Trump alike are holding or in a holding pattern again. The report Thursday from Wall Street Journal paints a picture of chaos and last-minute shuffling within the Manhattan District Attorney's Office in New York as DA Alvin Bragg prepares to indict the former president for allegedly falsifying business records connected to the supposed hush money payments made to porn actress Stormy Daniels in 2016. Now, all this has been pretty much debunked in the first place about what he's trying to push. Yet he doesn't care. He wants this. He wants to make it so that Trump cannot run again. This ain't going to work for him. The allegations, which have largely been shredded online as a gross overstep of federal overreach, claim Trump tried to keep an affair with Daniels secret in the lead up to his 2016 presidential nomination and victory. The former president has long denied that any hush money has ever been paid. In fact, he has insisted no affair happened. And Sarge says Bragg's case is not just weak, it is a twisted, grotesque, and convoluted parody of the law and a prosecutorial reasoning. Now, if Sarge was saying that, it would sound much more impressive. But at first glance, it would be fair to surmise that Trump's long denials could portend a lack of evidence or other problems with prosecution, thus delaying proceedings for a second time this week. But the Journal reported that everything is proceeding as planned. Well, here's what is proceeding as planned, and this is how the Democrats work. When they know without a doubt that they have a case that they know will not pass, What they do is they step back, as they have done here. They step back, and in the time that they've been pushed back because the grand jury won't do anything about this, the defendants or the people who are pushing this, like DA Alvin Bragg, he gets to sit back now and start making up lies. Pat Alvin. Yeah. Trump's nickname for Bragg is Pat Alvin. Yeah. And he's as... he's as off the rails as Alvin the Chipmunk is, actually. But it is common. The journal's Corrine Ramey wrote, it is common for grand juries in New York to hear multiple cases at a time. Grand jury schedules can be unpredictable because panels juggle cases with competing demands and deadlines, former prosecutor said, unquote. This latest delay follows a slightly different issue Wednesday in the Trump case. The grand jury meeting that was slated for that day was ultimately canceled at the behest of Bragg. So it wasn't the grand jury. And it's like I said, all he is now doing is trying to gain some time so he can figure out who he can bring in or who he can get to lie about this or what lie can he come up with that will make this sound like it's a horrible thing and it needs to be prosecuted. With all of the stuff that they did when they impeached, so-called impeached Trump twice, there were all kinds of things the Democrats did wrong. Did any of them get for the things they did wrong? No. Nancy Pelosi, when she tore up a copy of his speech, that's a misdemeanor if I'm not mistaken. Is she in jail now? No, nobody, nothing ever said. No police came and hauled her away. Now, if Kevin McCarthy had done that very same thing to, say, a Biden speech like that, police would have come in right then and there and hauled him away. And we'd probably still not be able to get a hold of him because they'd bury him so deep into prison that we'd never hear from him again. But Nancy Pelosi, she tears that thing up and it was on camera. Yeah, at least those chipmunks were charming. Yeah, but now according to the journal, it appears the earliest the grand jury will convene to discuss Trump will be after the weekend. So they're pushing it farther and farther back. And like that one line in here says, that it was because of Trump, of Bragg, that wanted to postpone it. Bragg knows he's in trouble. Bragg knows that what he's trying to do is not going to work unless he comes up with, okay, I said misdemeanor. Sarge says it was a felony. And I was going to say felony, but I wasn't sure. But what Pelosi did was a felony. Any one of us who would have been up there and torn that speech like that would have been in prison. That would have been the end of it. And they would have said, well, caught you on camera. You're tearing that thing up. But if they'd have done that to Pelosi, she said, oh, that's not what I was doing. I was just tearing up some paper here, and she would have gotten away with that. Why? Because she's a Democrat. Democrats can break all the laws like that and do felonies and stuff, because it was a felony because it was a destruction of an official record of the U.S. government, and that is required to be archived. What'd she do? She tore it up. Destroyed it. She should be in prison, but she's not. And the only reason why she's not is because Biden is president, she is a Democrat, and most of the Republicans don't have the gonads to to go after Pelosi because she scares the crap out of them. I don't know why. All she is just an old, bitter woman. But that article I was starting to read ends with, the report said grand juries typically do not meet on Fridays. The former president caused quite a stir last weekend when he announced on Truth Social that he expected to be arrested on Tuesday. Well, I announced that one on one of my updates. Not only was the former president with a looming potential indictment in his immediate future spotted at the NCAA wrestling tournament over the weekend, but he also called on his supporters to both protest and pray for the future of this country. Now, the left, when Trump calls for protest and praying, that means, oh, everybody's going to get out in the streets and they're going to cause all kinds of mayhem and they're going to destroy stuff. No, that's the left who does that kind of thing. And I went way over my break. I will be right back.
But what we saw in that Senate today.
No, wrong one. We will be right back. Conservative Nation Media, or CNM, is looking to bring in new shows so we can reach more people. We report the truth, not the spin of the liberal mainstream media. We worry because laws are not being enforced, and if you tell the truth, you could lose everything. You can't even walk in once safe neighborhoods. You are likely to get killed doing that. Right now, we have two shows, NWCR Radio and Black by Color Only. American by Design is on hiatus. We believe in God, law and order, and the Constitution. We believe our borders must be closed to illegals, and there are only two sexes, and we honor our veterans and our boys in blue, too. If you like expressing the truth and love for America, send us an email to Conservative Nation Media, all one word, 2017@gmail.com. Tell us your show ideas, and we will get back with you. We are Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins. Join us today. By Color Only Day here on CNM with our very own Vincent Brown out of Durham, North Carolina. Black by Color Only is one of the most informative shows on CNM, giving us the reasons that the apostles of blackness are leading this nation in the wrong direction, along with the left. And Vincent will come down on the right too when they do not do what is right. Listen to the wisdom of Vincent Brown on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will find out that the media is lying to us too, along with the leftists in our government. Some of the right are too, and in Hollywood also. He will make you use your mind and think a bit before making a rash judgment. That is Black by Color Only, only on CNM at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, where America always wins.
Put your feet on the dashboard, baby, take a ride and come on.
Okay, we are back. Calling number 646-478-5284. I didn't give that at the beginning of the show, but a letter from Michael Cohen's lawyer could serve as game-changing evidence in the Manhattan District Attorney's potential criminal trial of former President Donald Trump. The letter, written to the Federal Election Commission by Cohen's legal counsel, indicates that Cohen himself was solely responsible for a $130,000 payment to pornographic performer Stormy Daniels. The document was obtained by the Daily Mail on Wednesday. Mr. Cohen used his own personal funds to facilitate a payment of $130,000 to Ms. Stephanie Clifford, Cohen lawyer Stephen M. Ryan says in the letter, using Daniel's legal name. Ryan goes on to indicate that neither Trump nor his company reimbursed Cohen for the payment. When he said, quote, neither the Trump organization or the Trump campaign was a party to the transaction with Ms. Clifford, and neither reimbursed Mr. Cohen for the payment directly or indirectly, unquote. The crux of Manhattan's DA Alvin Bragg's potential case against Trump relies on the supposed payment made to Daniels, a payment that the prosecutor would likely argue amounts to an unregistered campaign expenditure. And then the question is asked, will the case be dropped against Trump? Probably not. When it gets to a grand jury, I don't know of too many that have been dropped. Cohen pled guilty to campaign finance violations related to the payment in 2018, according to the Department of Justice. Cohen has claimed that he was acting as an attorney to then-candidate Trump at the time of the payment and has indicated he made the payment at his direction. Former Trump candidate confidant claimed that Trump told him to pay off Daniels in congressional testimony a year after his guilty plea, according to the Daily Mail. Cohen was seen at Manhattan grand jury proceedings on Wednesday. Prosecutors are expected to summon an additional witness on Thursday. It's unclear when and if the grand jury will announce any planned indictments. And I think that case is kind of in trouble right now anyway, but Sarge says it's unethical to build a criminal case around a star witness who is shown by objective evidence that cannot be credible. And it is. If you lie to get something to be prosecuted and the prosecution is resting on a lie and your DA is pushing this, he's in trouble too. That's breaking the law. But they ought to disbar him for even bringing this case to a grand jury. And it shouldn't have been brought to a grand jury. And I think Sarge just called. I'll get you in here. Hello.
Hey, yeah, I'm here. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. Actually, today I wasn't going to do my show today because we had all kinds of problems with my wife's car and had to do some things with it. And I finally just went ahead and took it over to Firestone today and got it fixed, so I don't have to worry about that anymore. So I rescheduled the show for tonight and decided to go ahead and do it.
Well, I'm kind of glad you did, man, because there's a lot to say. There's all these days, as the Chinese say, and so very accurately say, we are living in interesting times like I think I've never seen. It's something every day that is not just interesting, it's grotesquely outrageous. Every day.
And you don't have to look at any one certain place. I mean, you can look all over this nation. You know, like I got that thing here in New Mexico about that abortion clinic that is just opened up here in Albuquerque, that their starting goal is of killing 75 babies weekly. Who does that?
Well, you know, when you're proud of it. I mean, look at how these people the more extreme elements in a pro-life movement actually boast of their affinity for abortion. Remember that woman? I think her name was something Phillips. I can't think of her first name. She's an actress. And she talked about how grateful she was to have killed her baby, how it was a wonderful thing for her career and her life. And literally the price of her career was killing her baby. And she was proud of it. I even saved that audio as an example of the admittedly the more extreme elements of the pro-abortion movement, but nonetheless a significant part of it. I could not believe this woman. She was using foul language. She was cursing. Maybe that's why, because she realized the incredible moral evil of what she was espousing. And I think she had to kind of cover it with fanaticism. That's the way a lot of people do have a vestige of a conscience will do when what they realize is so bad that they have to, you know, go over the top with it in order to try to make you accept it or justify it to themselves. I mean, if you ever get a chance to listen to it, yeah, her name was Busy Phillips. That's her name. Yeah.
Busy Phillips.
If you ever go on the web, get it, and listen to it, you will be simply amazed that she could even put her mind to think of things like this. But she did. She did.
Yeah.
So I'm not too surprised by it at all. Like I even got I found the audio clip. I say I can even play for it if you want to hear it. It's just beyond belief.
Sure. Check this out.
This one is one for the ages. Here we go.
Here I was, sitting in Los Angeles in my beautiful office of my own late-night talk show. Soon I would be driving my hybrid car to my beautiful fucking home to kiss my two beautiful and healthy children and my husband who had taken the year off to parent so I could focus on my career. And I have all of this, all of it, because I was allowed bodily autonomy at 15. I will not be shamed into being quiet. We will not be shamed into being quiet never again. I will never stop talking about my abortion or my period or my experiences in childbirth, my episiotomies, my yeast infections, or my ovulation that lines up with the moon.
There you go. I mean, what can you say to something like that, honestly? Oprah Winfrey said kind of the same thing, a little bit more gently, but pretty much the same thing. She was ruminating about how her life would have been different if she hadn't aborted her child. So in other words, the price for her fame was the price of her child. Now, I'm just wondering if Busy Phillips ever told her children that she aborted their sibling. I'm just wondering. Well, how would that go if they ever come to the realization and ask her about it someday? Is she going to answer them like this? I'm just curious, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it'd be really funny if one of the kids finally asked her, "Hey, Mom, did you murder our little brother or sister?"
Yeah. That's literally what she's screaming about and bragging about. Literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's as though the child's life did not factor into her considerations at all. I mean, not even a scintilla of obstacle to her deliberations and her decision. Not even a word of regret. Not a syllable, not a letter of regret for the child that she killed.
Nope, there was none there. And, you know, it's just like I think last week in my show I mentioned that in this last session that just ended here in New Mexico, one of the people that they have honored with a holiday was a lady, and I can't remember her name right now, but one of the things
that
she said...
Well, you're
not talking
about the one from Mark Sanger, are you?
No, but this lady actually said that when a baby is in the womb, it does not have a soul. So you can murder it if you want to, and it's not murder. Well, they've made a state holiday for this bitch.
it's on the tip of my tongue as to who that was. It wasn't Margaret Sanger, but it was someone else. Because Margaret Sanger, I believe, was an atheist.
Yeah, I think this woman's last name
I don't think she had anything to say about souls. I'm not sure about that atheist part, but I think she was. Anyway.
Yeah, I think this lady's name was her last name was something like Hurt Perens or something like that. It's a Spanish name, but she is just one of the most evil people that you know.
That's part and parcel of the dehumanization of the people. Anything you want to kill, I mean, it's always easier to kill them when you dehumanize them. And after all, you know, I mean, every single human being walking around the planet today was at one stage in their development at that point. That seems to me to be rather incongruous, don't you think?
Absolutely.
I mean, but, one of us wasn't at the stage, not one single one of us that wasn't at the stage where these children are routinely killed.
Yep.
And so I would ask them, and anybody else who believes the way they do, at what point in the continuum of your life, from the moment of your conception until the time of your death, is it okay for someone to kill you?
Yeah, exactly. Can you wait just a few seconds here? I'm at the top of the hour. I need to do my top of the hour break.
Sir, I eagerly await it because I'm going to go ahead and feed my dog. My friend is telling me I better feed him or he's going to eat me.
Okay. So we'll be right back.
Okay.
The news for America that is good for America never gets reported. So that's why shows like NWCR Radio exist. We will be right back after these important messages. High in the Sky Drone Services, located in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is your one-stop shop for drone photography from a perspective that for a company was hard to get before without endangering the health of your employees. Get aerial photography easy with High in the Sky Drone Services at 505-317-8741 and rest easy in your decision. For the past few months, we have not heard from our good friend and mentor, our very own Uncle Bing Fisher, but he has been around, though very busy, starting businesses and trying to get things going where he is. So his show has been put on hiatus for now, but in the coming month or so, we are looking to see him return to CNM as he is about to retire and will give him more time to let us know all the things that he has a good ear for hearing. Bing's mellow voice and his expertise in engineering, along with his love of America, keeps us all informed as to what we should be doing and why the things are happening here in America as they are. The only side that seems to have consequences anymore are the right. The left can do anything they want, then blame it on the right, and always laying the blame where it shouldn't be, and they always get away with it. This has to stop. Listen to our very own Uncle Bing Fisher when American by Design returns soon on Sundays, where America always wins.
Please don't do anything you will never live to regret.
Angry blowback for the downing of Ukrainian passenger jet gathering momentum in Tehran.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding.
This is Kathy Henners of Daily Roll Call, and we need more voices like Robert who aren't afraid of the wrath of the left, even when the truth is told and it doesn't fit their agenda. Now, with Biden in charge, this is more imperative than ever. From New Mexico in CNN's Freedom Studio comes the second hour of the show. And now, here again is Robert.
Back and Sarge, if he's back, I wanted to play this one clip here, and it's like 2 minutes and 47 seconds long, but it's bringing us back to that D.A. Bragg and what Dershowitz had to say about this. And this is pretty interesting because we've got Democrats who will vote against Trump and then do everything they can to stop his agenda if he becomes president. And one of the things a lot of people don't really realize here is that Dershowitz is a liberal leftist. He actually is, but he believes in the Constitution. And he was on Newsmax, and one of the things I heard just the other day was that Newsmax is now back on DirecTV again. So all those people who couldn't get Newsmax because DirecTV had dropped them, it's back on again. But here's that clip from Newsmax, and he was on, I can't think of his, Rob Schmidt's show. And here's what he had to say.
Professor Alan Dershowitz back with us tonight, author of the new book, Get Trump. Sir, good to have you back. Still no indictment. How humiliating this must be for Alvin Bragg in this moment, considering so many in his office were reportedly against this decision.
Well, they're right to be against it, and it really puts Bragg in harm's way. It's unethical and subject to discipline if a prosecutor calls a witness to the witness stand who he does not believe is telling the truth. And there's no intelligent person who could now believe, after the statements by Bob Costello and the letter to the election agency, that he's telling the truth. And you just can't do that as a prosecutor. And so he has really three options to try to make the case around Cohen without using Cohen. That may be why they're delaying it and calling all witnesses, or using Cohen and subjecting yourself to possible bar discipline, or dropping the case, which would be the smart thing to do. I don't think there'll ever be an announcement that the case is dropped, but it is certainly possible that it will wither away.
Right.
Now, grand juries always indict. It would be really unprecedented if there were a grand jury revolt. It would be wonderful. It would be refreshing. It would really show the grand jury acting as it's supposed to act, as an independent organ to protect the defendant, not as the handmaiden of the prosecution. But I doubt that will happen. It's possible.
Hmm. Are you worried about the precedent that's being set by the behavior we're seeing in this country, this mob mentality, prosecutors and DAs being elected because they promised to attack somebody that their voters hate? It's so immoral, and we have these people all over the country.
Well, that's why I wrote my book, Get Trump. It's not about Trump. It's about the precedent that's being established by targeting individuals.
Yeah.
Show me the man and I'll find you the crime. That's what happened in the Soviet Union in banana republics.
Right.
This is a terrible precedent. And today it's Trump, tomorrow it's a Democrat, the day after tomorrow it's your Uncle Charlie and your niece and your nephew. And so every American, I'm a liberal Democrat who wants to maintain my constitutional right to vote against Trump for the third time. I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm a supporter of the Constitution. I'm a supporter of the Bill of Rights, of the Sixth Amendment. And this is just such a violation of the rule of law. This is the weakest case and the greatest abuse of prosecutorial discretion I've seen in 60 years of practicing law. And I've seen a lot.
I've seen a lot, yeah.
Compared to this one.
Now that is from a liberal Democrat, but one who believes in the Constitution. Sarge, you back yet?
Yes, sir. I heard that completely. I completely agree with Dr. Dershowitz. I mean, he's pretty strong in favor of constitutional procedure. I got to give him that much. I agree with him every now and then, but not very often. He's usually pretty much spot on.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that one, he was spot on, I think.
Yeah, he doesn't take any nonsense about, you know, especially something as blatant as this. I mean, this is not even marginal. This is not something that's even on the margins. This thing is just, I mean, it's just bizarre in its horrid legal reasoning. Just absolutely bizarre.
You know,
now, if this is anything like Illinois, there is another way that even if the grand jury declines to indict, and this would be improbable. I don't think it would happen. But in Illinois, you can also arrest someone on a felony without a grand jury indictment. That is, you can go before a judge and with evidence to swear out an arrest warrant for a defendant for a felony, but you have to provide the evidence that are, it's kind of like a grand jury but decided by a judge.
Yeah.
And then the good judge takes a look at the evidence, sees if there's probable cause to issue the arrest warrant for the suspect, and it's done that way. And then you have an arraignment before the judge, and then they set a trial date and all sorts of stuff. So the defense makes their motions and all sorts of stuff. You know, that's the way it goes. Now, I don't know if that's the same way in New York. I just could not even conceive that he would even dare to do such a thing if the grand jury was to decline to indict, if that is allowable in the state of New York, which I do not know. But, I mean, some people, when they lose face, man, they just roll the dice and go for broke, you know? I mean, they don't care what might ensue from it. I mean, they just are determined to, just do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And they don't care what kind of damage they do to the country, just so long as they get their point across, even though it's wrong.
Right. Right. And a grand jury, after all, is just basically determined probable cause. And, you know, and what the Fifth Amendment requires, you know, it's probable cause for an arrest, you know, which is why you don't even have to have all the jurors out of the 23 jurors. All you got to have is a majority. So if you get, 12 out of the 23, well, you got your indictment. And you can go arrest the offender or have him surrender and be processed.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I found an article from a place called From the Right Politics, and something I'd never seen before. And they had an article that was just really interesting, and it followed in through the history of the United States. And the headline of it was, America seems to go crazy every 50 years or so. And they talked about it. It was written by Michael Barone. And he said, amid news that Donald Trump is about to be indicted by a hyper-partisan prosecutor of his history, and of his hysterical responses and prompted by vagrant reading about the War of 1812 and Woodrow Wilson's violations of civil liberties in World War I, a thought occurred to me, America seems to go crazy every 50 years or so. You start with the War of 1812, about 50 years after the Colony's Stamp Act protests, there is a touch of absurdity here. Because the slowness of the transatlantic communication, Congress declared war because the British restrictions on neutral shipping 6 days after the British repealed them. America won their major land victory in New Orleans 15 days after the peace treaty had already been signed in Ghent. The American strategy was based on delusion that Canadians would welcome American conquest. And it goes on to talk about that, and it says almost exactly 50 years later, the U.S. plunged into the Civil War, which outgoing President James Buchanan might have prevented by sending troops to secessionist South Carolina, as his mentor Andrew Jackson had done almost 30 years earlier, but the differences were fundamental. The Democrats supported the liberty of slaveholders to retain their property anywhere in the nation, and increasing number of those citizens regarded slavery as intolerable. And then it goes on to 1812. and he lists all of this.
Wait a minute. Wait, there's an intermediate step in between that. Because, there was the, I don't know if you ever heard it, it was called the XYZ affair, when there was this was like a quasi-war between the United States and France after the Revolution when the United States was there. And it led to the passage of the Alien and Sedition Acts, which oddly enough was authored by John Adams, and it was found to be unconstitutional.
Yeah.
It was a diplomatic scandal that was like a limited, undeclared naval war with France. A lot of people don't even know about it. But the significant, most significant thing about it was it led to the Alien and Sedition Acts, which was really an overreach by, of all people, John Adams, which meant if you said things against the president, you could be tried for sedition, basically.
Yeah.
And that was another thing. I mean, the Congress passed these laws, and, you know, and John Adams was strong pushing for them. You know, the president could deport aliens and permitted their, you know, even those lawfully in the country. And permitted their arrest, imprisonment, deportation during the wartime, and raised the residence requirements for citizenship from 5 to 14 years, and there's a whole lot of stuff about it that was really constitutionally troublesome. So yeah, these things do pop up from time to time.
Yeah, but this article goes on. It talks about almost every 50 years, America does something that just is insane. And it was an interesting article. It's on Archimax.com, I think. But it was a good article.
Another 50-year period there, boss. Hey, you're onto something there, because 50 years after that, remember what Abraham Lincoln did to the Congressman John Blandingham, the notorious copperhead? He locked him up.
Yep.
And suspended a writ of habeas corpus.
Yeah, I remember that one, and I was going to mention that.
That 50-year thing seems to have some merit, doesn't it?
Yep.
I think it was like 1862,
1863
he did it.
Yeah, I think it was something like that, It was during the time of the Civil War, anyway.
Yeah, I think that guy is on to something there.
Yeah. One of the other things I had found was another thing by a Dr. Chris Martinson, who has said that the COVID-19 shot is the most disastrous medical intervention in human history.
I think that's understating the case, actually. It's certainly among I think it's probably the worst epidemiological response to any serious disease ever in the history of the United States, for sure, and probably in the history of the world, because I've never heard of any period where healthy people were quarantined unless they were living in the same household as a person that was sick. But normally healthy people are allowed to continue with their affairs. They never locked down the society. That's a term that they do in prison. Not the free societies. Lockdowns.
Yep. And, but this one I found from a place called Vigilant Fox. And they actually had a video there, and I recorded the doctor talking about it, and this is pretty interesting.
They're still pushing the fifth booster for children. I mean, don't give up the con. What do you think about that?
That is those people deserve very, very strong criminal penalties. The FDA committees that went ahead and approved these things for children, they did it with no data. They didn't have sufficient data. There was nothing there to suggest that the cost-benefit analysis could be pushed through. This thing just got rammed down everybody's throat. So you used the word bioweapon before. I do think that this COVID and scare and everything around it and this vaccine were used principally. So a bioweapon could be something that harms you biologically, right? It's a virus that comes in, harms your body. We think of it that way traditionally. Greg, I think of this more as they used this as a means to get in and ruin people's minds. I don't know what they did. I can't imagine what's going through the minds of a doctor, of a pediatrician, of an OBGYN expert saying, let's give these shots to these people. And they use this fancy term, bivalent. We got this bivalent vaccine, right? It's both geared for this Omicron variant and the original Wuhan strain, which hasn't been seen in the wild in over 2 years. It doesn't even circulate, right? And the Omicron strain that the bivalent part does attack also has not been seen in the wild in a while. So they don't actually work, but worse, when you give these to people, as you give more and more of them, their immune systems, for some significant proportion of people gets worse and worse and worse. And so that's what's about to come through with common knowledge. You can see them fighting it, Greg, which is people are starting to notice that, like, hey, my friend who's quadruple jabbed seems to be getting sick all the time now with whatever, cold, COVID, whatever. It's very clear that this was the single most disastrous medical intervention in all of human history.
And there it is.
I got to agree with that. I mean, I've never seen a more... Again, I think COVID was an opportunity. As Rahm Emanuel said, never let a crisis go to waste. I think it was an opportunity for those who want to centralize power and seize power. They saw it mainly as an excuse in order to see what sort of central medical fascist authoritarian regimes they can institute and see how far they could get away with it. To a great extent, for all too long period of time, they were actually able to get with. It was really scary to see the direction they were heading in until some of the states started to push back against it. No telling how far would it gone had they not done it.
Yeah, when Florida and Texas started pushing back on it, our governor here in New Mexico just about went ape crap shit crazy over that.
Oh, I know.
And then
my governor here in Georgia, which I'm sorry to say, I got to give him one thing. No, he resisted the lockdown imperatives, and he opened up the state sooner than most. And when there was restrictions, they were relatively minor. But the worst part of it is they ignored all of the past historical understandings of good epidemiological practice, meaning herd immunity, getting immunity, immunity from disease being better than an artificial vaccine. The fact that you don't quarantine healthy individuals because, in effect, you want healthy people who are probably going to help the herd immunity thing along. All of these practices that have been accepted for hundreds of years, even before they developed the germ theory of disease, were all of a sudden found to be no longer valid. I mean, it really made you say, why is this so? And when you realize what they did, how they used it, in effect, to allow for ballot harvesting and universal mail-in balloting, even when it was in violation of state constitutions like in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, then it becomes clearer to me what they were probably after all along.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like, I think I brought this up last week and the week before, too. In 1920s, they had that swine, the flu. I can't remember what the Spanish flu. And they had a vaccine back then and that they tried using it. And after it killed like about, I think, 20 people, they got rid of it because it killed too many people. Now we've got this stupid vaccine that has killed God knows how many people now. And we've still got people who are just dropping dead.
I can guarantee
that every one of them that are dropping dead have had the jab.
And then when you go to the CDC itself and you look at the vaccine adverse reporting data or whatever it is, VARES, I forget what the ES stands for, they themselves admit there seems to be an increased likelihood of myocarditis and other circulatory adverse events with people that are vaccinated. Even the CDC is admitting to it. And then we have all this empirical evidence of perfectly healthy young people just literally dropping dead. All of a sudden.
Yeah, and I think this last week I heard of two of them where kids that were one was on a football field, another one was on a basketball court, just dropped dead.
Yeah, but that's so easy to tell us that, you know, there's nothing to see here, let's move along, there's no reason for alarm, it's just an anomaly, it's something that couldn't possibly be related to the vaccine. You couldn't, don't you dare call it a clot shot. Nah. Yeah.
And
human beings are going to make their polar ice caps melt in another 2 years. We know that too, because that's real scientific.
Oh, yeah, real scientific. They know that You know, when the North gains ice, the South loses ice, and then when the South gains ice, the North loses ice, and every time the North loses ice, they've got it through. Oh, the global warming, polar bears are going to drown because they don't have any place they can.
Yeah, they weren't. It's not like, you know, the Vikings were growing when they had vineyards in Greenland and were growing grapes or anything. That didn't really happen. That was just one of Norse myths. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Nah.
Exactly. And
like Odin's War or something. It wasn't really that warm in Greenland 1,000 years ago. This is one of them Norse myths, you know, like Odin and Thor's hammer or something like
and
that.
Loki.
The Vikings didn't keep good records anyway. They were just a bunch of plunderers.
It just really gets to me that all of this stuff, if people would just look at it and say, okay, is this really true, or can I research a little bit and find out if this really happened? Or it's like the thing with that we were talking a couple of weeks ago about Finn that was in World War II that and I can't remember.
Larry Tornay.
Yeah. And I did look that up. That was actually rather interesting.
I found an article about that. And fighting communists. He was born to fight communists, literally.
Yep.
He didn't care what army he served in as long as he was able to fight communists.
And now we got people who come down on you if you say, well, we got to stop these people because they're evil, and they'll say, "Well, they're human beings. They got feelings." Well, who cares? If they want to kill me, I don't care.
A lot of people have feelings. I mean, it's not, you know. I mean, I know people got feelings, but you know, if you're your enemy is your enemy. You know, I mean, if it's war, I mean, hey, you know, you got to kind of put that aside while understanding, yeah, you're killing human beings, but hopefully it won't be a permanent state of affairs. Eventually there will be peace.
Yeah, and the thing that I can always remember is...
Unlike the war on unborn children, which seems to be permanent.
It's
been a long time since the United States have been dropping bombs over Hanoi. You know, it ended. They love to make those analogies and say, oh, it's just the same thing as in war, but no, war's end at some point.
Mm-hmm. But this one won't until we get rid of them.
Yeah. To war, and it's cost infinitely more lives than most of those others the United States is involved in.
Mm-hmm. And they keep talking about, you know, it's like that one lady that they gave the new state holiday for, who believes that it's not bad to kill a baby in the womb because they don't have a soul yet. That's just trying to come up with a reason why murdering this baby is not a bad thing.
Well, sorry, I just can't adopt that. I think every human being, I think even Heinrich Himmler and Adolf Hitler had a soul. It was just a black one, but they still had them. That's just a convenient way to dehumanize somebody so you can kill them, you know?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things in the Bible, it talks about how the baby was known to God before it was even in the womb. So,
yeah.
To me, that says he's got a soul.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, it's that's the way it is. But, you know, right now we don't believe in transcendent objective truth anymore, at least in many circles in the United States. We believe everything is my truth and your truth and their truth and who knows what the truth is, and everything's subject to a sliding relativistic moral scale, and you know, no one can ever know. Hell, we don't know what the truth is anymore. We know what a woman is, right? So, you know, that's the way things are today. That's the whole idea behind everything, to just engender confusion in everybody about what undergirds and supports the major institutions of this civilization and this republic. Because when you do that, you can just tear the whole edifice down and replace it with something else, which it was never intended to be. That is the object behind all of this. We can't miss the forest for the trees.
Yep, that's exactly right. I just, you know, and one of the things that I'm constantly going against, like the governor here in the state of New Mexico and actually the legislature in this state, is they're constantly trying to push these laws against getting rid of guns, getting rid of people's right to sovereignty and people's inherent rights and their right to bear arms and all that stuff. But I was looking at, I got me a book of the Constitution of the state of New Mexico. And in the Bill of Rights is every one of these things. You got the supreme law, it's the supreme law of the land. You got popular sovereignty, right of self-government, inherent rights, right to bear arms, habeas corpus, freedom of elections. You have freedoms against searches and seizures that are beyond, you know, without any proof. And all of these things that are in here, our governor has gone against every one of them.
Well, you know, the whole point of federalism was to allow a state to be self-governing in accordance mm-hmm. with the people of that particular region who want to be governed in a certain manner. Now, the United States Constitution sets the minimums for people's rights. You can't go below that floor, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Many state constitutions have added protections that the U.S. Constitution doesn't have. For instance, several states have a right to privacy written into their constitution. It's not in the federal constitution, but a state is free to add more rights if they wish to for their citizenry. The thing is, they can't go below what the United States Constitution allows, but they're perfectly free to go over and above what the Constitution allows. So, you know, I mean, that's the whole point. You see, the New Mexico Constitution is essentially a mirror of the United States Constitution, and they probably add a couple of things that are protected rights that the U.S. Constitution doesn't have. And that's the way it should mm-hmm. be. All these states aren't going to be cookie-cutter copies of each other.
Yeah, well, freedom of religion was one of them, too. But in the preamble of it, you know, and they're always talking about, the left always talks about how this nation was not formed as a Christian nation. Well, the preamble of the state of New Mexico pretty much mirrors what the Constitution says. It says, we the people of New Mexico, grateful in to Almighty God for the blessings of liberty in order to secure the advantages of a state government, do ordain and establish this Constitution. Well, that right there acknowledges God.
Well, the United States Constitution was not held to forbid the establishment of a state religion, because many states had state religions, and I believe several of them had them right up to 1813 or 1823 or something like that. They had official state mm-hmm. Religions, and the Supreme Court never found those were unconstitutional until they did the incorporation, where they incorporated the Bill of Rights to all of the states. So
yeah.
Any state that still had a state religion would, of course, at that point be unconstitutional. But I mean, mm-hmm. there were no prohibitions on state religions when the Constitution was first adopted. If a state wanted to adopt a state religion, it was free to do so. You know, this is said we couldn't have a national state religion.
Okay, I agree with that.
But, you know, like I said, the Supreme Court changed that when they did that incorporation ruling, you know, and then after that, well, the Bill of Rights applied to the states, because originally the Bill of Rights, even free speech didn't apply to the states. First Amendment did not apply to the states if they wanted to restrict it further. That was up to the people within their state to decide how much to restrict free speech. Because if you mm-hmm. look at the movie, Young Abraham Lincoln in Illinois with Raymond Massey, you ever see that movie?
Yeah, I think I have. It's been a while, but
That is a great movie about Abraham Lincoln. The part where they condensed the Lincoln-Douglas debates down is really outstanding. In the debate between him and Stephen Douglas, in that movie, they really do a good job of condensing it. But
mm-hmm.
there is one point in there where they're arguing about free speech. And they're saying that, well, man, a fellow ought to have the right to say what he wants to say. I forget what the issue was about, but this is when Abraham Lincoln was you know, he was, at the time, he just owned a store or something like that. It was Andrew Johnson. It was a movie about Andrew Johnson, Abraham Lincoln. And they were arguing about whether or not person has the right to free speech. At that time, Andrew Jackson was owning a tailor shop. And a lot of people were agitating for a certain particular view, and they were out protesting. And they were saying the man ought to sit, and the deputy sheriff was saying you can't do it because we'll arrest you if you do, because we got laws against that here in this state. And he was saying, well, a man ought to have the right to say what he wants to do, because at that time, states could restrict free speech because they hadn't incorporated the First Amendment to the states yet. Mm-hmm. Federal government, Congress shall make no law. And Congress meant the United States Congress collectively, the Senate, and the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
So that movie accurately portrayed that. If you have a chance to watch it, forget what it was. It's about Andrew Johnson starred Van Heflin. That's another great old movie that a lot of people don't know about, because it really raised a lot of interesting things in the spirit of the times in which he lived. And again, young Abraham Lincoln's another one. And the other one is the one where Henry Fonda played Abraham, young Mr. Lincoln. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would recommend those old movies as being in a lot of ways superior to a lot of the newer ones. Although one with, what's his name, that just came out not too long ago was pretty good. I can't think of his guy's name. Really good actor. It came out about 3 or 4 years ago, about Lincoln. It's called Lincoln. That's pretty good, too.
Yeah, you start talking about Lincoln. The only one that comes to mind right now is that one where Lincoln was a vampire.
Oh, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer. Yeah. No, even though that was rather entertaining, still, the other three I mentioned were the ones I think everyone ought to see. Yeah, Abraham Lincoln, Illinois, young Mr. Lincoln, and Lincoln, the recent one.
Yeah, I'll have to look those up.
I like those older movies. Young Mr. Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln, Illinois are available on Turner Classic Movies, if you got it.
Oh, yeah, I get Turner Classic Movies, so I can see that.
They're there. If you want to go there, you can get them.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up, because I like those older Hollywood movies, because back then they were more conservative.
Oh, yeah.
And they would actually put out movies
that... Respect for America, United States, and its traditions. They didn't mock them or anything like that. They held them very seriously.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the thing that always kind of blew me away is that, you know, liberals want to get rid of guns, but what kind of movies do they always put out? They always put out these movies of these guys who are really gung-ho and American, and they fight the bad guys, and they use guns to do it. Those are the movies that sell.
You know, I think Joe Biden, somebody just recently posed another gun control law wherein they want to eliminate sales of any firearm to anyone under the age of 21. And I found that really funny, because when I was just shy, about 2 months shy of my 19th birthday, the United States government issued me an M48A3 main battle tank, which had a 90-millimeter cannon. I was a tank commander. I had a 90-millimeter cannon, fired high-explosive anti-tank rounds, white phosphorus, beehive canister. I sat behind a 50-caliber Browning M2 heavy machine gun. I had a 7.62-millimeter coaxial machine gun next to the main gun. Everybody on the tank crew was issued a 45-caliber pistol as your personal armament. In the turret, there were two M3 submachine guns with plenty of 45-caliber ammunition and magazines and hand grenades, white phosphorus, and, you know, AG. And now this is before I'm even 20 years old. United States government has still told me, you are to be responsible. You are in command of this tank and the crew. You are responsible for it, and we're going to treat you like an adult if you're not. We can court-martial you if you don't do the right things with this tank.
Mm-hmm.
I just found that too funny. Hearing some politician talking about, you know, kids under the age of 21 shouldn't be using simple rifle. And the United States Army trusted me at 19, just shy of my 20th birthday, with an M48A3 main battle tank.
Yep. Yeah, one of the
but
most powerful.
But that's the way it is. We got these leftists doing what they're doing because that's where they roll.
Yeah. Well, there was an article I saw sometime the past day or so of this prosecutor who is now going after the parents because they gave their son a gun.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember where that's at. I keep thinking Illinois, but to me...
It's not illegal to give your child the gun. It's just that you have to make sure that he knows how to use it responsibly.
He knows how to use it, yeah. And that's my thinking. You know, my dad, when I was young, My dad had guns in the house, and he always told us, he said, don't you ever point a gun at somebody unless you mean to kill them. And he always kept his guns unloaded. The bullets were right there, but, you know, in a drawer. But we never got in any troubles, and I never saw any of those guns get up and walk around and start shooting people.
Well, when I was going to high school in Chicago, of all places in Chicago, when I was going to high school, we had junior ROTC, and I was in the junior ROTC. And in our ROTC, we had about 48 M1 rifles, United States rifle caliber 30 M1, same one they saw in Saving Private Ryan. We had two Browning automatic rifles. I'm talking about the light machine gun the Army issued to its troops. We had three M1 carbines. Two .45 caliber pistols, and one M3 submachine gun right there in the high school. The high school. Now, the instructor, when the drill team would fall out, we drill with the M1 rifles. And he'd come in the morning, he'd unlock the arms rack because he had the key to the arms rack where the arms were stored. It was pretty secure, but he had the keys to it. But then he would turn the whole thing over to the cadet colonel, you know, our battalion commander there. He'd turn it over to him, and he'd go have a cup of coffee. And then we were alone with all these military firearms. And the discipline was rigorously enforced because I remember our commander, Colonel James Martin. He was a martinet. He would not tolerate any horseplay with those weapons. He'd drop you for push-ups and everything else and just start screaming at you if you didn't behave them like a responsible adult. And at the time, no one thought it was particularly much. I even remember we went to the science fair, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do for the science fair. I'm going to do a bring along one of the charts they had, you know, these training charts on how the M1 rifle worked. And I brought it to the school science fair, me and another guy. He bought a carbine. I bought an M1 rifle. We went up there, and we would explain scientifically how an M1 rifle works and the principles of operation and the 8 steps of the cycle of operation with the charts. And nobody thought it was unusual.
Well, you know, it's like when I went
to... Think about anything like that happening today.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be roundly excoriated.
Yeah.
But there were no incidents. Nobody ever had. And most of the high schools in Chicago now, had similar armories. Most of them.
I remember
so-called bad neighborhoods like Lindblom and Englewood. They had the same kind of arsenals with the same sort of weaponry.
Yeah. You know,
You know, today I would say, no, you can't do that today.
Yeah.
But it was definitely instructive to teach us responsible handling of firearms because they would not tolerate that sort of thing if you did. You were frowned upon. You just couldn't engage in horseplay. We had to be very serious and treat them as though what they were, deadly instruments of war.
Yeah. Well, I went to high school here. At the time, it was the biggest high school in Albuquerque, but I went to Highland High School, and I remember watching these kids drive into the parking lot with their trucks, and they'd have rifles in the back windows.
Yeah.
And they'd just
they go hunting right at school. Yeah, they go hunting right at school. Gets a squirrel for the pot.
Nobody saw the thing about that.
No. They take them in there, some take them right into their lockers and lock them up in their lockers.
Yep.
Yeah, like
exactly.
I said, you know, the problem is not universal across the United States. The problem with homicide and firearms is limited to 15 out of the 3,300 colonies, counties in the United States. 15 out of 3,300, where about 85% of all homicides, excluding suicides, and I'm excluding suicides, but homicide caused by another to a person. That's what a homicide is. You know, a death of a person caused by the actions of another.
Yeah.
They occurred about 15% of the counties in the United States. And even then, that's confined to about 60-something percent of them, or 48 and 60% of them are confined to 10 cities in these 15 counties.
Yeah.
The problem isn't across the United States. Hell, over 53% of the counties in the United States do not even report one homicide a year. We know what the problem is. We know where it's concentrated. We know where it's located. But it's like everything else, you can't tell the truth about it. You got to pretend it's a problem that everybody's got everywhere in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And we can't say anything about these politicians who keep doing the same things, expecting a different result.
Yeah, I know. It's sick. It's just sick. And there's a reason for it, though. The reason for it is they want to fundamentally transform the United States. They do not want you to accept and realize that the Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled in Heller decision, the McDonald decision, now the Bruin decision, that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right that is subject to the strict scrutiny test has any other right in the Bill of Rights. Not one scintilla different. Not the right to vote in an election, not the right of free speech, not the right of self-incrimination or speedy trial. It's subject to strict scrutiny in the traditions and history of the United States and what was allowable in 1791, which means everybody could own a cannon in 1791 if you could afford to buy one. Because
mm-hmm.
there weren't any restrictions on owning cannons.
Well, their big issue today is that, you know, that back in the 1700s, all you had was muskets. Well, that was state of the art at that time. You know, the military had the same thing.
Cannon. You could own a cannon.
Yeah.
You could literally, how do you think, look, when they issued letters of mark and reprisal to privateers, you know, in Congress, they issue a letter of mark and reprisal to a privateer.
Yeah.
Privateer had
mm-hmm.
to fly his own warship with his own cannons. You know, I mean, there wasn't no ATF back then. There wasn't a National Firearms Act of 1934, which was the first federal regulation of firearms. And then there were no federal regulations against firearms until 1934.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, hearing all the, oh, we have a tradition. No, we don't. No, we don't. That's just not true. I mean, you know, you could order a Thompson submachine gun through a hardware store if you wanted one. You had the money.
Yeah.
You could afford $200 back then for one. That was a hell of a lot of money back then.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Now they're trying to get rid of all of our gasoline cars, which, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
And they're pushing all this stuff before the technology is ready to take it.
Yeah, well, look, the internal combustion engine has advantages over, like, look, there's certain niche applications for electrical vehicles, I will admit. I'm not going to say they're totally worthless, but given what infrastructure is available, and I think their lack of flexibility, their propensity to catch fire spontaneously and be almost impossible to extinguish, along with the fact that every single vehicle battery that is created requires about 500,000 pounds of the Earth's crust to be dug
mm-hmm.
up, the cobalt and lithium to manufacture it.
Yep.
I mean, it's just simply people just would be staggered if they knew what goes into making an electrical vehicle battery. I mean, I'm telling you. I mean, the things that they use are really toxic. I mean, they contain 25 pounds of lithium, 60 pounds of nickel, 44 pounds of manganese, 30 pounds of cobalt, 200 pounds of copper, 400 pounds of aluminum, steel, and plastic. There's over 6,000 individual lithium ion cells in a lithium ion car battery. And so, again,
mm-hmm.
you got to process about 25,000 pounds of brine for the lithium to make the lithium battery, 30,000 pounds of ore for cobalt, 5,000 pounds of ore for the nickel, and 25,000 pounds of ore. Again, 500,000 pounds of the Earth's crust to make just one 800-pound vehicle battery, electrical vehicle battery.
Yep.
Now, the weight of an electrical vehicle is about 40% more than a comparable internal combustion engine vehicle, meaning there's going to be increased wear on the roads, increased wear on the bridges, increased wear on tires and the infrastructure. So all of that's going to add up to more pollution in the long run. Say nothing of what you got to do to the Earth's crust.
And on top of that, where does most of our electricity come from?
Most of it comes through fossil fuel generation.
Fossil fuel generation, exactly.
And it's come through slave labor from mines in the Congo and Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literal slave labor, child labor, slave labor.
Yep.
There is not a net gain to the environment from switching from petroleum fuels, which have one singular advantage over electrical vehicles. Now, electrical vehicles do have some advantage over internal combustion. They do provide more instantaneous torque. They are probably simpler on maintenance and the like, okay? I mean, the motor itself. The problem with it is energy density, and you don't have that kind of energy density in a battery. It doesn't have the same energy density as a gallon of gasoline has. A gallon of gasoline has about the same energy density, has maybe 1,000 or 1,200 batteries, lithium-ion batteries has. And you can fill a whole tabletop with the same amount of batteries it takes to run for as long as it takes to run on a gallon of gasoline. The energy density is just no way comparable.
You know,
Think about an aircraft. If they try to go to all electrical aircraft, now think of the weight of the batteries you're going to have to get that thing off the ground. Think of the weight of the thing. And if you have an incident, you can't. We got an airplane. You can dump fuel to get rid of the weight to make it safer to land in an emergency. Why are you going to dump lithium batteries that would probably weigh, I don't know, eight or nine or 10 tons?
Yeah, and if it hits a building, there's the building.
you can't dump the batteries. I mean, this is crazy. These people don't even think anything through.
They're really not, because, if they would just think it through and have scientists working on the electric vehicles and figuring out ways to maybe make them charge themselves as you're driving?
Well, they already kind of have that. It's called regenerative braking and a few other things.
Mm-hmm.
The energy that goes into brake, the heat that comes off of braking is turned into electrical energy.
Yeah.
So that they have that. They can do. But the problem is that when you're driving and you're not braking, you don't get any benefit from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you brake, you pick up some energy, but then you got to accelerate back up the speed if you're on a highway. So whatever benefit you get, if it's not stopping to go driving, you're not getting any benefit from regenerative braking. Now, hybrids make a bit more sense because, you have the petroleum engine to recharge the battery as it goes along. The problem is you're still going to need fossil fuel for them, too.
Yep.
And plus, it introduces a level of complexity and expense that is not present in either the electrical vehicle or the internal combustion engine vehicle. I'm not saying there aren't some advantages to electrical vehicle, but in the main, in the aggregate, I think the internal combustion engine is simply superior.
I do, too.
But at least the kind of things I want to do.
Yeah.
And you don't have to completely recharge your internal combustion engine vehicle if you're low on gas. You just go in a gas station, get 3 or 4 gallons of gas, and be out in a minute and a half or 2 minutes.
Yep.
You don't have to recharge it all the way back up. I mean, in an electrical vehicle, you got to sit there and wait for that damn thing to recharge. For depending on the type of charger you got, anywhere between 3 to 24 to 3 days. If you got a home 110 volt charger, it's gonna take you 3 or 4 days to charge the thing up. If it's a Hummer H3.
Yeah, well, I was listening to an advertisement for the Hyundai Electric that they've got out now, and it says that one of the things they specify in that is that it takes 40 minutes to charge it 3/4 of the way. Well, that's kind of like with the computer, it'll quickly charge up to about 75% to 80%, and then it trickle charges. And that's probably what that car does.
Yeah, and rapid battery charging, while it may be convenient, does significantly shorten the life of the battery pack.
Yep.
It is easier on batteries to charge than slow. Even lithium-ion batteries, it's better for their life if they recharge relatively slowly than all of a sudden, because they get hotter quicker, and the heat is what will eventually kill a battery over time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something else I'd like to bring to your attention before, we get off the show. and that is this transgender women in sports mania, what I think to some extent has helped to fuel the insanity. Now, remember, it was the gender-determinate radical feminist identity left that gave us this mantra that shall not be questioned, that a woman can do everything just as well or better than a man. Now, again, they didn't qualify it. They just made that as a flat-out categorical statement. A woman can do everything just as well as a man. Now, they didn't say things like we can pee standing up without messing ourselves up better, but that's it. That's something for another day. But pretty much everything else, the women can do everything just as well or better than a man can. Okay, so here's the thing now. If you accept that as true, which, of course, we know it's nonsensical, then why should it matter if a person who is a man who is hardly even competitive as a male athlete against other similarly competitive males, say he's mediocre or in the bottom third of the rankings as a man. But when that man transitions to be, quote, transitions, unquote, to being a woman, that man can easily be a woman because we all know, again, remember this is a mantra, this is a sacrament, a woman can do everything just as well as a man or better, okay? Don't argue with it. It's just true. Everybody just knows it's true. Now, since you accept this is true, then of course it doesn't matter if a man who calls himself a woman goes in there and shatters every woman's record there is. It shouldn't matter because a woman can do everything just as well or better than a man, even though we know from both empirical and objective data that when it comes to any sport involving speed and or strength and or power, that is simply not true.
Exactly.
It's not even close to being true. Men, we have to say this, and this is what is so painful for them to admit to. Men are superior athletically to women. That hurt. That is something they don't even want to contemplate as being true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, men are closer to women than anything.
Yeah, and there are women who are really good at
it. That is a lot of the reason for what we're seeing now, that failure to even admit going in that when it comes to athletic competition, similarly situated men and women cannot compete on an even basis because men are so much athletic superior to women.
Yep. And they got the muscles and, you know.
They got the circulatory system. I mean, even when you do hormones, the problem for women is that men during puberty get a different skeletal structure. It's denser. It has different leverage points between where the joints connect and the ligaments attach and everything else. So even hormones won't erase that advantage. The skeletal geometry of the skeletal structure enables men to have superior athletic performance. I mean,
exactly.
In every respect, athletically, a healthy, well-trained male is going to significantly outperform a healthy, well-trained female. It just is. But we're trying to pretend as though what we've known for millennia throughout human history all of a sudden no longer true because we've got these new ideologies. Human nature doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, and you started mentioning that, and my first thought was Leah Thomas, and I usually call him by his actual name, but to me
he was number 80 competing as a man. 80, ranked 80 in the NCAA ratings. 80. Then he goes to play as a woman, and he just shatters all the women's records.
I thought he was farther down than that. I thought it was.
He might have been. I know he wasn't any higher than 80.
Yeah, I think it was something like 248th or something like that.
Oh, that might be right, too. But, you know, it's like that German, that Barsch, Barsch guy, who took the challenge from the Serena with the Williams sisters about playing tennis. He said she could beat somebody who might be ranked, say, in number 32. He was ranked like number 250, right? And the night before he went out and he had a beer and he stayed out and partied all night. Then he beat both of them in back-to-back sets. We beat Venus, and he beat Serena in back-to-back sets easily. And I saw Serena Williams on one of these talk shows, and she was saying, look, I know people think I'm really great and all that, and I appreciate you thinking I'm great, but I played this guy, Barsch, this German. She said, She had never seen played against that kind of speed and power before. She said, yeah. I want to stay with the women. And everybody knows she's the greatest woman tennis player there's ever been. And she said she wasn't even competitive with the guy who was number 232 in the world.
Yeah.
Both of them. Remember, he beat both of them bad. I think Venus got 6-2 set against him. But I don't think Serena scored a point against him.
Hmm. I think you're right on that one.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, I mean, we like to play these games with these crazy leftists and these progressives who are just silly. And I think women should have their own sports because, I mean, every woman should aspire to be a champion in a sport. That's a good thing. It's healthy. It's good for women. They should. But listen to me. In any sport involving speed and or strength and or power, the champion will never be a woman. Never. And
unless
that ain't fair either. But if they insist upon having this crazy ideology, then I say let it be. I say get rid of all the women's sports then. Just let everybody compete together and let the chips fall. But
well,
then they insist upon having this craziness.
That's the one thing that I keep thinking, you know, if they were so equal on everything, why were there women's sports and men's sports, and why were they separate? You know,
we know why, because we want women to be able to aspire to championships.
Exactly.
If you ever realize it, you know, when I was boxing, I was a fairly good boxer, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to make pro, but I could have kind of aspired to it, you know? And the aspiration what kept me going and made me as good as I could be as an amateur. Okay? So, okay, fine, great. But, you know, women won't even have that, not even aspiration, if they have to compete against men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's simply not going to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, most of these men who decide that they're women make fools of themselves anyway.
It's ridiculous. It's beyond absurd. I mean, everybody looks at it, and, you know, and because so many people these days are indoctrinated to accept absurdity as normative, like, you know, like Pete Buttigieg chest feeding his baby boy, you know, and going on maternity leave and all this craziness. I mean, you know, everybody's afraid to say how utterly absurd so many of the left nostrums are. They're just beyond grotesque. They're just absurd.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, but you got it normal. That makes sense. That's the way God intended it, yes. it's just, hey, here we are. Here we are. Everybody's lying to themselves. Everybody's lying to themselves about everything.
Yeah, and then when you say anything against that, you're the one who's the bad guy.
But what really worries me is when they apply this nonsense to the armed forces. That's really what's bad.
Because
literally life and death and the survival of the nation at stake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too serious for this foolishness. Now, I just saw Matt Gaetz question a theater commander, a four-star Marine general, in a hearing. You ought to see it. He's asking this guy if he is aware that a person had been trained by Africa Command. And remember, he's a theater commander. He's a four-star general.
Four-star general.
Okay? Oh, that's the highest rank you can get today because they don't have general in the Army or general in the Air Force or a fleet admiral anymore. They just got, you know, the highest you get at the present time is four-star flag rank. Okay? You know,
okay.
Matt Gaetz has asked this Marine general if he knew anything about whether or not this particular colonel who had been trained by Africa Command was responsible for coups, leading a coup against the government of Burkina Faso and another guy who led one against Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy didn't even know this guy. And here's Matt Gaetz showing him photographs of him standing outside the Africa Command headquarters building with American soldiers. I mean, you don't know anything about this. Does this guy represent the core values you're supposed to be teaching them about? Instituting coups?
Mm-hmm.
But he asked about the other guy. He didn't know about him either. And he gave some semi-coherent answer about some boilerplate language about the values and core values we're attempting to instill in these partners that we're training. There's a lot of BS, blowhard, bloviating. and he completely ignored everything Matt Gaetz seemed to be asking this guy, seemed to be going over his head. I mean, if this is any indication of this guy's command abilities, what the hell is he doing being a theater commander?
I definitely would not want to be under him.
You ought to go watch it, man. It is just startling. It was just utterly unprepared to answer these basic questions.
Yeah, and I think Milley is another one.
It was clear to me he was a diversity, equity, and inclusion hire. It was clear to me.
Yep. Hell, I've never been in the military, but I can see what's going on there. And, you know, they wouldn't let me. I tried to join when Vietnam was going, and they wouldn't take me because I took medicine that they decided that disqualified me. But I can see the problems with what's going on. I've had people who were part of the military, and they said that when you are in the military, you don't want to have to have somebody beside you. You have to look out for, because you're watching for yourself what the enemy is doing. You don't have to watch what's beside you.
Yeah.
Because
they should
be able to fight just as well as you do.
And I'm telling you right now, you know, the one thing that is critical, especially to a combat unit, but all units really, but especially a combat, is leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Man, good leadership can make all the difference in a fight. Yeah, man, I swear to God, you have no idea how it is. You don't even have to like the good leader. A good leader is a person who looks out for his men, sees that they're well-trained, they're well-equipped, that, you know, that they're in an appropriate place for him, that they all get the idea he's treating them fairly, and he's competent at his job and knows what he's doing. And he transmits that confidence to his men. And the commander that does it makes all the difference at critical times. Trust me. Been there, done that, seen it. I had first lieutenant, my platoon leader, and he had told me to lay down some covering fire for another unit was maneuvering to try to take out this bunker we were trying to get. And I was scared to death. I was like a dog shitting pizzas. I was just shaking like a dog shitting pizzas. I was scared that I couldn't move because I just seen another guy who was really popular to come and get his arm blown off trying to take the bunker. And I was scared to get going.
Mm-hmm.
And this lieutenant came over me and kicked me dead smack in my ass. That sergeant, I told you to get the squad moving. Get it over there and put face on it. And, man, he startled me so much I looked at him. And I kind of admired the guy. I didn't want to let him down. So he kind of shook me out of it, and I did what I had to do.
Yep.
And it was his leadership that got me moving.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if
leadership
we'd have had that
makes all the difference.
If we'd have had somebody like Milley in charge of D-Day, we'd have never won that.
Well, I understood that Milley was actually once upon a time a halfway decent soldier. He became a politician. I mean, not great, but at least competent enough, you know.
Yeah.
But I think somewhere along the line, he became a political general, and there's a few things worse. I mean, you got to remember, on D-Day, this country was blessed to have two generals at a critical time. One of them was Theodore Roosevelt Jr. on Utah Beach, who literally, because all the plans were worn and shit, because the division got landed in the wrong spot. And rather than try to re-land the beach, he said, well, we're going to take this invasion right from here. And he just improvised everything on the spot, changed the plans, and was awarded the Medal of Honor for it because he led from the front, and he did exactly what was needed at that crucial time and place. And the other one, even more so, and he didn't get the Medal of Honor, I don't know why, was Brigadier General Norman Dutch Cota. Commander of the division, assistant division commander of the 29th Infantry Division on Omaha Beach, and that man took over the job of a squad leader, a platoon leader, and got that division moving when it was just bogged down, and all the plans had gone to hell.
Yep.
And the leadership he exercised. When he had to, he just got a squad up. He got engineers up to blow holes in the beach obstacles. He led squads taking out bunkers with a Thompson submachine gun in his hands and leading men. He's a brigadier general.
Yep.
And stuff like that. At crucial times, he did that over and over again. He's standing up yelling to men, come on, we got to get off the beach. And people looked at him and couldn't believe it. But there he was. He didn't get hit. But like I said, leadership was everything at that crucial time. Because
all
the plans had gone to hell on Omaha Beach, all of them. Nothing was working the way it was supposed to work. They were completely bogged down and pinned down.
Yep, and they had to improvise to get out of there.
And everything was on the spot. They opened up the beach exit, get through. All the tanks had been foundered and sunk offshore that was supposed to provide fire support. The Navy couldn't see the beach because of all the smoke and the gunfire. The fire direction, forward observed fire direction teams were dead or wounded. Radios didn't work. They couldn't contact the Navy for sure. And then again, other units like the naval destroyers improvised, and they just decided to almost run aground. Some of the destroyers did. They almost just about ran aground to get close enough where they could take the enemy bunkers under fire with their main batteries.
Yep.
But that came a little bit later. Coda was in there when it was nothing. The bombers were supposed to put foxholes in the ground by bombing the beach. They had all gone because they were afraid of hitting the boats. They delayed their drops, and all the bombs fell harmlessly in the orchards and passed. All they did was kill a bunch of cows.
Yeah.
They didn't hit any of the German beach defenses or anything to any extent whatsoever. There was no cover for the men coming on the beach. It was all flat ground. There's no shell craters for them to duck into. And the German machine guns just cut them down like wheat. Into all that chaos came Norman Coda. Just an incredible story. I don't know why I didn't give him the Medal of Honor. I think he earned it that day.
Oh, but I think many of them did, but it's, I guess.
He got the Secret Service Cross, which ain't chopped liver, but really the guy should have gotten the Medal of Honor. Maybe one day they'll correct.
Well, you can always hope, you never know anymore. Left probably thinks of him as a demon.
But the point is that leadership is everything. And when you got leaders who are just promoted to fill some sort of stupid agenda like they did in the Red Army, and one of the reasons the Red Army, not the only reason, of course, a lot of it had to do with the German innovation and tactics and their initial strategies, which seemed to be working correctly.
Yeah.
A lot of it had to do with the fact that Stalin had purged his armed forces and put politically reliable generals in place and leaders. The very best of them, the innovative people like Marshal Tukhachevsky, whose charisma had the paranoid Stalin worried as a contender for leadership in the Soviet Union. He had him and thousands of other men purged after the Nazis planted a ridiculous story about possible coup from the Soviet ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And Stalin was just looking for an excuse to get rid of a lot of people he considered might be politically unreliable. And so they instituted a purge on their own army, purging 55,000 people in the Red Army, mainly in leadership positions.
Mm-hmm.
And replaced them with political toadies. Not in all cases, but in many cases. And that was another reason the Red Army was so badly prepared for the titanic defeats they suffered in the first year of the war.
Yeah.
I hope our army is ahead of something similar.
Well, it's like you said, leadership is everything. And today we just don't have it.
No, we just don't have it. I think with Biden, he's the worst commander-in-chief, worst president in the history of the United States.
He thinks he's doing such a great job, but history won't be good to him when it finally catches up.
Well, and now, if it's written by CNN or MSNBC or NPR, it'd probably be good to him. But if we get real historians writing, no, it will not be good for him. He's the worst president in the history of the United States.
Yep. Well, I'm just... I'm really glad you were here today because this was such a great show because of you. I had some good stuff in it and you had some great information. So,
well, look, man, I mean, you got the platform, you set everything up. I mean, I think it's really because of you. I'm glad to be able to contribute because, like I said, I think we should be here to aid each other, particularly in this particular time when there's so much misinformation about everything.
Oh, man. Yeah, and then the good information that's out there.
Yeah, bullying, demagoguery, intimidation. I mean, it's vital that we who wish to preserve this constitutional republic and our traditional liberties tell people what we know that will serve to protect that.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I've got this show. It's just when I first started, I was nowhere near as good as, you know, as I am now. And I know that in the future, I'm going to get better. But it's just this kind of show and shows that it will actually tell the people what is really going on has to be out there, because if not, we're going to lose our freedoms. We're going to lose this country. And the left is actively working on that right now.
Oh, yeah. They really want to see the country diminish so they can transform it. I mean, these people are fanatics.
Yeah.
They're the most destructive bunch of human beings I've ever seen in the leadership of the United States. We are literally being governed by a kakistocracy. They are the most unworthy, illegitimate people to ever hold high office and govern, ever, in the history of the United States, in my opinion.
Well, the thing that I've been watching, like I've watched this since Nixon. I think Nixon was the first president I ever voted for. but what I've watched is like from when Reagan took over, he got done what needed to be done, and then when he was out of office, we all went home. We got everything done that what we wanted to, and then we went home, and the Democrats came back with a vengeance. They had been sitting in the back rooms watching and formulating plans this whole time. And then they started instituting their policies, and they would always institute just beyond what they thought they could get. And then they would back off a little bit, but they would always gain where the Republicans never did. And that's why we're in this trouble we're in now, because Democrats, no matter what, have always gained, even when they were the minority. They would complain and say, oh, you're not letting us be part of the government. This is not right. Well, that's exactly the way they do it when they win. They take us completely out of it.
Well, you got to remember that I think the real radical floodgates got opened a bit, maybe 25% of the way with Obama. He really started. Well, he gave us Joe Biden, you know. But I think that when they saw with Biden's election, now is the time to go for broke.
Yeah.
They're out in the open, and I think since they're out in the open now, it's time for conservatives, if not Republicans, because I don't know, sometimes I don't know what Republicans are thinking, I swear to God. But I think it's time for conservatives, people want to conserve this republic, it's time for us to fire for effect since they're out in the open.
Exactly.
Let it go.
That's one of the reasons why I wish that I could get a bigger listenership with this show, but it actually is growing. It's just not growing as fast as I want it to. But
there's a lot of people out there working toward what you're working toward. And I think the effect's going to be cumulative if we can just keep it up. Sure, we don't get any Nina Jankovic's in charge of any government disinformation boards.
Yeah,
authoritarian and fascistic in their thinking. It is incredible. They didn't think that 1984 was a cautionary tale. They thought it was an instruction manual.
Instruction manual, yeah. Yep. And, you know, but shows that will actually tell the truth have to be here, because if not, there's nothing stopping them.
Yeah. History, well, you know, I think there's nothing more valuable than free speech and free inquiry. I think more so than one of the things they always say, that Western civilization attained its preeminence and its dominance. Genocide, slavery, oppression, sexism, homophobia, name all these isms and phobias and all of that. No, that ain't what made Western civilization so preeminent. What made Western civilization so preeminent was free inquiry, discourse, empiricism, rationality, the scientific method, and most of all, debate.
And
free inquiry and debate, which leads to epistemology, which is the verification of whether something is true or not. And I think that is what ultimately made Western civilization so preeminent, more than any other single thing, and that's what they most wish to attack.
Yep. Yeah, everything that was good about America.
That's why they want to shut it down.
Yeah, they just want to cut this whole thing down and bring in socialism and communism.
Well, actually, kind of this grotesque version of Marxism. It's, see, the American version, these neo-Marxists that are American, they kind of couple it with, like I said, with all this transgender homosexual jive and all this other stuff, this radical individualism, but it's only a means to an end. See, all the stuff we're looking at, like, which is kind of, you say, let's radically individualistic. That's not Marxist. Marxists are very authoritarian and hierarchical. That is true. Remember what their objective is, to tear down what is with chaos and anarchy. And when they tear down everything with chaos and anarchy, then they can reinstitute everything along authoritarian hierarchical lines. That means we'll be covered in the manner of the World Economic Forum and them goofballs and oligarchs in Davos, Switzerland would like us to live. You'll own nothing and be happy as we feed you a plate full of bugs.
Yep. And that's where the people have got it completely wrong. You know, they've got to start looking at what they're actually going for. And what you just mentioned, exactly what they're going for. They don't want the people to be in any way, shape, or form able to go against them. We've got to be the puppets that do everything that they want us to do.
Yeah, I mean, you got to realize, you take a look at a typical Marxist communist state like North Korea or Cuba or anything else, crime in the streets is relatively rare. I mean, because they're police states.
Mm-hmm.
In a police state, you don't have too many restrictions on the activities of the police. So keeping crime down in police states is relatively easy. They just lock everybody up and they shoot them.
Yep.
Like in China, they don't have much crime. They don't have much crime in a lot of these places because they're literally police states.
Literally
now, the reason they're letting all these criminals loose is because they want to create chaos and anarchy. Now, a lot of these dummies, these stooges who are doing it like the fat Alvin Braggs, they don't know they're stooges. They've just been given a line of palbum to ingest and regurgitate, and they do it. They don't really, they're just stooges and fools. But the people who are kind of orchestrating all this, they know what time it is, and they know what they wish to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. And they've got the backing of the media and academia.
Yeah, look at this little idiot at Stanford University trying to keep that federal judge from speaking. I mean, she was the worst example of a little authoritarian Karen-esque harpy I've ever seen in my life. She's giving lip service to the idea of free speech while she does everything she can to suppress speech and encourage her little brown shirt Bolshevik little bastards in the audience to shut down this judge. It's just unreal watching her saying this, man.
Yep. And she actually succeeded because he didn't say anything, which kind of was a bad thing. I wish he would have said something.
The object is, again, while she paid lip service to the idea of free speech, she did everything she could to inhibit it by coming up with this passive-aggressive therapeutic phrases like safe spaces and is your speech really worth discomforting all these people in their safe harbor havens? I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty much the same thing that happened here. Tommy Lahren came in Albuquerque to UNM down here and had to cancel her speech because of the violence that was caused by the people who were telling everybody that she was pushing bad information and that it wasn't true and all this stuff, and they forced her out. Charlie Kirk came in about a month or so later, and he wouldn't let that happen.
Yeah, they accused him of wanting to lynch transgender people. They literally said he wanted to lynch them.
Yeah.
You got to understand, free speech is not dependent upon whether what you say is true or not. As long as you don't commit libel, slander, or incitement to crime, violence, or fraud, you are supposed to be free to say anything you want, even if it's a lie, as long as you're not under oath. That ain't no free speech. You ain't got free speech when you're under oath in a legal proceeding. But beyond that, you are free to say anything. The remedy to bad speech is more speech that is good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
The thing that they don't realize is that you have the right to say anything you want, but when
again,
you
as long as it doesn't fall in those exceptions,
there are consequences. And they don't look at
well,
the consequences.
Well, they're not supposed to speech. Yeah, for free speech. Because people might want to shun you because they got a right to shun you if they want to shun you.
Yeah.
You know, in certain lines of employment, you may be subject to being fired.
Mm-hmm.
That is a given. But the main thing is the government not supposed to mess with you. That's the main thing. The government's supposed to leave you alone.
Yep.
Now, the only people who don't have free speech in the country, as a general rule, are members of the armed forces. In that case, and there's a reason for that, why they're exempted from much of the Bill of Rights. We know that. They're subject to Uniform Code of Military Justice. They got a separate legal system. Okay.
They got a separate
but the
legal
citizens
system.
Are not supposed to be bothered by the same sort of restrictions that are made on members of the armed force, because you don't have free speech when you're a member of the armed force. You can't get up there and criticize your commanding officer in a mess hall out loud. Stand up and say, I want to talk about my idiot battalion commander. He's a doofus and a fool. He doesn't know what he's doing. Besides, he's a pervert. You ain't got the free speech right, dude. They'll throw you in a stockade.
Yep.
Court martial, you'll throw you in a stockade and stuff like that.
And you'll end up in there so darn fast that you'll never know what hit you.
Yeah, but I'm saying you don't have a free speech right now. If you're a civilian, the only thing you have to worry about is getting fired. If you talk about your boss like that. But, you know, but and even not then, depending upon what kind of contract you got. But in the armed forces, you don't have a right to free. You, oddly enough, you don't have the right to keep and bear arms because, you know, on the post, the post commander can restrict private ownership of weapons.
Yep.
Now you got to lock them in the arms room or you can't keep them here. You got to keep them off base. So, you know, you don't have the right to keep and bear arms. Oddly enough, in the armed forces, you don't have the right to withdraw your labor. That's why we're supposed to respect members of the armed forces. We know what they give up to serve and protect this country.
Yeah. That's absolutely the truth. And they have to stay by that kind of thinking because if they don't, the military is going to get weak.
It will. I guarantee you it will. The reason the military ethic has been developed over thousands of years and after studies of thousands of battles and wars, it's not just an act the military is the way it is, and it's almost universally so in almost every army. Almost every single army on the planet shares common characteristics. Now, they may differ in certain details, but they're all formed basically the same way. They have the same sort of military ethics and discipline and laws, any soldier can readily recognize the ceremonies, drill, and practices of another army as being common to his own.
Yep.
And it's the reason for it, because this is what makes an army most effective and combat ready.
Yep. And they just don't seem to realize
the armies that are efficient and capable.
Yeah. And ours was very capable in World War II, but we had good leadership.
You know, I think the best armed forces we've had in recent memory was the armies and the armed forces that participated in the Gulf War. That was a singularly outstanding, well-trained army. And the army that went into the Vietnam War was pretty much the same way, too. The army that went into the Vietnam War, I say from 1965 to 1969, was as good an army as you could get at that time. The problem was that because of the home front unrest and the seeming lack of will to win it, morale just went to shit. If Richard Nixon had been the commander-in-chief at the beginning of the involvement in 1965, that war would not have turned out the way it did. I can guarantee you that. It would not have. Nixon was, for all his other faults, he was a reasonably effective commander-in-chief for that war and given what he had to give up after the utter mismanagement by the Johnson administration.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that army from 65 to maybe 60, just after the Tet Offensive, maybe 69. And then you had the Army of the Gulf War, was probably the best army in living memory we've had since World War II. Was the army after Korea when the UN and the 8th Army and the 10th Corps suffered that drastic setback when the Chinese intervened in Korea. One of the greatest generals, unsung generals in the history of the United States Armed Forces, again, leadership, Matthew Ridgway, took command of the United States Armed Forces. He became Supreme Commander of the United States Army Armed Forces
in Korea. Before that, he was commander of the 8th Army. He completely revitalized the 8th Army and the UN command. He was, he went back to hard training, hard discipline, applying lessons lost, and by the end of the Korean War, the Korean Army that was at the end of the Korean War was just about as good as his World War II predecessor, but the army that went into Korea was totally unprepared to fight.
Yeah.
Many of the kind of things in their time that were intended to be reforms had actually weakened it. The Doolittle Board was one of these things that instituted these so-called reforms that actually weakened the army. And the army they had in Korea was a constabulary force that was totally unsuited to combat a major peer army. It was totally unsuited. They were soft. They were out of shape. They hadn't had hard training. And then all of a sudden they pitched them in a battle against a ruthless, well-equipped, well-trained foe who already had lots of combat experience. And just that was 5 years after we had the greatest armed forces probably we ever had in the history of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Just 5 years, just went all to pieces.
Yep, it doesn't take long.
With inattention, it doesn't take long at all. I mean, Task Force Smith went there, got overrun, almost totally annihilated. The 24th Division was just about cut to ribbons. Then they kind of reconstituted after the Pusan perimeter, and MacArthur made that brilliant landing in Incheon. And they drove the North Koreans out of South Korea, went all the way to the Yalu River. MacArthur ignored all of the warnings that the Chinese were about to intervene. And next thing you know, the Chinese have just swamped through with 400,000 so-called volunteers and completely swamped the 8th Army and driven 10th Corps into an 80-mile retreat. The Marines from the Chosin Reservoir and the 8th Army on the west side at Kuna Ri. They almost annihilated the 2nd Division.
Yeah, I remember
that. It was really
that.
A bad thing. It was a bad thing in those days. There was a very famous war correspondent called Walter Winchell, and he told Americans in his radio broadcast, he said, if you have a son in the 2nd Division, pray for him. Because he had discovered how bad it was for those troops that got caught in that ambush at Kuna Ri and the Chong Tong Pass. It was god-awful. It just god-awful. And the Marines were in no better shape. Task Force Smith and everything. I mean, it was god-awful. I wish people would really acquaint themselves with what happened in Korea in the first year of the war, from June to December, January of 1951, June 1950, and learn the lessons we should have learned from that conflict.
Yeah. Well, that one article that I had started to read to you about that how every 50 years this country seems to lose its mind, you know, that pretty much says it. We're not learning our lessons. You know, when we learn a lesson, we don't keep the lesson as what we need to do to keep that from happening in the future. We just forget it.
Well, we learned the lessons, like I said, during the Gulf War. We had an army that was ready to fight and wipe out the Iraqi army. It was no contest even the way they wanted. But then we got turned to the war on terror, where we're fighting basically a light infantry war against goat herders, basically. You know, and we've been doing all this attention on special operations and, you know, relatively small, low-intensity fighting. I mean, it's not low-intensity for people involved, believe me, but you get my point. It ain't like what's going on in Ukraine right now. That's World War II shit. I mean, it's not the intensity and scale of the fighting in Ukraine. It's like a smaller version of World War II.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm worried about, this armed force being able to fight if we have to go up against China or we have to go up against Russia or both.
Yeah.
But now's the time to reemphasize the conventional aspect of war like what you're seeing in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And then special operators are going to be important because they've always been important in recent warfare to see certain key objectives, to do certain things like that, but in the main, it's going to be fought by conventional forces and special operations rather than being the focus of everything are going to be the people who help the main efforts of conventional forces. And the problem is, because we've been fighting this war on terror for over 20 years and that's been the emphasis, now we're faced with something entirely different in Ukraine and potentially with Taiwan. It's time to start thinking World War II again.
but with different technology.
Yep, I agree.
And you Joe Biden is not helping in the least.
Oh, he is not. And he can't seem to keep his mouth shut when he starts to say something that's stupid, which every time he opens his mouth is another one. But he just can't seem to learn from what he's done wrong. And every day he sits there and thinks in his mind that he's doing the greatest job anybody can do. And
I don't
think
he ever knew anything. I really don't.
No.
He's been a potato head all his life. He's always one of the dumbest men in Congress. At least he had a certain dynamic about his personality. He did have a dynamic personality when he wasn't senile, but he was still stupid. You know, and a liar and a dissembler and an utter corruptocrat. He's always been in it for the grift. Whoever will help him enable his grift, that's who he's going to be with. Because, you see, he used to be a moderate to a conservative 30, 40 years ago. He has clearly reversed himself on almost every public policy course he ever undertook once with no significant explanation as to why.
Mm-hmm. And he really hasn't accomplished anything.
It's the leftist progressives who are helping him maintain his grift.
Yeah. And
he's
he really
no
hasn't.
He's got no core. He's got no real ideology other than whoever's going to help him maintain his corruption. And he's convenient for the eminent greasy around him to pull his strings, like Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, and to be that guy Klain, who was the chief of staff, and all these others.
Mm-hmm. And all that stuff is destroying this country. We've got to wake up before this country gets totally annihilated by what they're doing to us.
No, so some things, you got. Well, I can appreciate the fact that there are signs of a reemergence of good sense. I mean, Disney has gone woke and they're going broke. They got to lay off about 8,000 employees or so.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to watch their movies and they're losing tons of money. We saw what happened with Signature Valley Bank and Signature Bank. And so these are things, they're bad. They're kind of encouraging as to when you think of the reasons as to why these institutions are failing. People are no longer woke. More and more people are becoming awake.
Yeah, and then on top of that, almost weekly I see an article about how far down CNN keeps going. So
how far down what keeps going?
CNN.
They keep
losing more and more people watching them.
How can they lose any more people that still have any? They didn't have. Relatively speaking, you might have more people listening to you than they do.
I'm serious.
they wouldn't even break 500,000 viewers in some cases a night.
Yeah. And one of the things I heard the other day was that now DirecTV has now brought Newsmax back on.
Well, there you go. Success of Fox News is saying, not saying that Fox News is perfect, but they certainly are covering topics that the mainstream media won't go through at all unless they're just such hot-button topics they can't avoid it.
Yeah.
I mean, Fox News regularly reports on the border. They regularly report on the fentanyl crisis. They regularly report on things like CRT and the diversity hoax and all that other stuff, on crime. They regularly report on these things. They do not do that in the mainstream media.
Yeah. Well, I know that's one thing that I was constantly pushing when they got kicked off of DirecTV. I was constantly emailing people and stuff like that to get Newsmax back on there. Now the next one that I'm looking at now is get One America News back.
that'd be nice.
You know, the funny part about this whole thing is here in Albuquerque, when Newsmax got taken off of DirecTV, I am not paying for my TV, and I get like thousands of channels that come right off the internet. Well, I get both Newsmax and One America News anytime I want them. Got knocked off of DirecTV. I was still watching Newsmax, which thrilled me to death.
Yeah, well, I just got a bunch of places that I got. I go to Breitbart, Gateway Pundit.
Oh, me too.
I go to Thomas Sowell. I go to this guy, Benny Johnson. I think he's pretty good.
Benny Johnson, yeah.
Yeah, there's some people I go to regularly for my source of information, and I think I got a pretty good, pretty comprehensive view of everything when I go through all of them. I don't just rely on, like, Fox, but I got to admit, I never miss Tucker Carlson. He is so good and so hugely entertaining. And that infectious laugh he's got, you know, just, you know, I love Tucker Carlson, man. Tucker Carlson cracks me up, and I think he hits the measure of suck, because these people hate to be laughed at. They take themselves so seriously.
Oh, they definitely do, and I love Tucker Carlson, too.
Carlson just ridicules them and mocks them and makes them look like the big dummies that they are.
Yeah. Yes, I listen to Tucker Carlson. I listen to Dan Bongino.
But yeah, I like him. I like him, too. Joey Bag of Donuts. Yeah, I love him.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I'm starting to run out of time because I know that once this show hits exactly at 3 hours, it just quits. It doesn't warn you or nothing. So we're coming
just
up
go.
On that.
In that case, I guess I should bow out gracefully, eh?
Yeah. But thank you for calling in, and thank you for being part of the show tonight. I had a ball, man.
I plan on doing it again if you'll have me.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
All right. So, again, thanks a lot for doing what you're doing. Keep up the good work. And as I'm sure you will do, go forth and spread the word.
I will do my best.
Good.
God bless you, and thank you for calling in.
All right. Till then.
Okay. We are running towards the end of the show. There's one message that I had to get out, and I haven't gotten it out yet, so I'm going to do my last video, my last advertisement, and one of them I've actually gotten permission to use Warriors Serving Warriors here in Albuquerque, but I will do my last break, and then we'll cut to the end of the show.
I will remain as long as you do to bring you the news of the day. We will be right back. Did you know podcast advertising is one of the most effective ways to advertise your product or service? Thousands of people could be hearing your ad here. To start boosting your business with podcast advertising, go now to conservativenationmedia2017@gmail.com and send us a copy of the ad you want played, and we will do the rest. Thank you, and God bless. Many of our veterans deal with significant personal issues on a daily basis. These can include any combination of combat-related, medical, or psychological issues, as well as stress from transitioning out of a highly structured environment. It is our hope that through our familiarity with these struggles, we can use our experiences and connections to help these vets move forward in a positive direction and enjoy a fulfilled life. Our vision is to put an end to homelessness and suicide that seems to be prevalent among our veterans. Our mission is to remember, honor, and serve our veterans and their families. Who we are is Warriors Serving Warriors, and we are comprised of veterans of our U.S. military with a variety of backgrounds and professions. Although we are a veterans group of Legacy Church here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, we accept vets from other churches and denominations. What we do is actively seek veterans who would like to be a part of our elite Christian group and share our desires to help and equip other veterans who are in need of assistance. We help other veterans who are in need
of assistance with their transition to civilian life or have spiritual, physical, or emotional needs. We are currently proudly serving veterans in the Albuquerque metro area with future plans of expanding throughout the whole state of New Mexico. We meet every month to execute a strategically plan to reach our veteran community with the slogan, No Man Left Behind, giving them direction and or referring them to someone that could help them better their lives. If you know someone or are a vet yourselves, give us a call at 505-302-1999 or go to warriorservingwarriors.org. You can also email us at wswnmvets@gmail.com. That's Warriors Serving Warriors. Give us a call or join today.
Ceremonies or celebrations for Black students, Asian students, Latinx students, Native American students, and LGBTQIA+12345678 students next month. The university will also have a general commencement ceremony for all students. Well, why not do this just for all students? Include everyone. It doesn't freaking matter what your beliefs are. If you graduate, you graduate. You graduate with a bunch of them. You don't get the choice to have your own graduation party just because you're Asian or just because you're Latinx or just because you're LGBTQ, whatever. Why not just do it all at the same damn time? This is freaking ridiculous. People do not realize you're doing all these things. And what does how do they succeed in these things? They need money. They're spending your money or the money that goes to the college in grants and things like that on stupid shit like this when they should be doing stuff like teaching the students how to live a productive life. And teaching them LGBTQ crap is not. Teaching them that if you're Asian, you have to have your own ceremony separate from everyone else. If you're gay, you have to have a ceremony separate from everyone else. All this costs money, folks. This is something the left does not seem to realize. All this woke crap that's been going on and has been being shut down all over this nation now, thank God, is costing this nation nothing more than millions and millions and billions of dollars that could be spent somewhere else, like maybe closing our borders so that all this fentanyl and crap would stop coming in. You think this is all helping America by doing shit like Michigan University is doing by hosting separate graduation celebrations based on race and sexuality? No, what it's doing is bringing racism back to American campuses. It's all of the advances that America made when it came to racism and to to sex and getting equality of sex and all these other things are being shoved down the toilet and flushed because no one is doing what we learned. And it's like in that article that I read that every 50 years, America seems to go crazy. They forget what we have learned, and we have these little peons who decide, oh, this is horrible, I'm so offended. Well, what about the people, what about the American people who are offended by what you guys are doing? Doesn't that matter? No, it probably doesn't, because we're patriotic Americans, because we believe in what America stands for. And that is what is destroying America today. That is what is destroying our freedoms. That is what is destroying our Constitution and our constitutional republic. We are not, like I said at the beginning of this show, we are not a democracy. Because if we were a democracy, all this crap, this woke stuff and all of the things that like the Michigan University is doing now would be fine. Mob rule, after all. That is not what a constitutional republic stands for. That is not what a constitutional republic is. And I don't care, you leftists who seem to think that you have it all right, you've got it all wrong. And you're destroying this country. We are coming up on the end of what could be one of my longer shows. I had a large article on this whole thing about this university hosting all these separate graduation ceremonies. I just don't even want to talk about this anymore. This is stupid. And all the people who are pushing this kind of thing are stupid. This nation is being laughed at by the rest of the world for the stupidity of the things that our politicians like Governor Newsom in California and Hochul in New York and Grisham in New Mexico are all doing. Because what they are doing is stupid. What they are doing is anti-American. What they are doing is tearing this country apart. And mark my words, folks, that's exactly what they want. They don't love America. They don't want America as it was founded. They don't want America as a constitutional republic. Hell, they don't even want it as a democracy. Because a democracy actually gives the people too much power. They want a monarchy is all they want because they want to be in charge, period. They want to be rulers over this nation, rulers over the people. And the sooner that the people realize what is going on, the better off we're going to be. I am not exactly sure why, I did mention this earlier, why this is happening. And it's because when the Republicans get what they want, they go home. They live their lives. Democrats never do. Democrats don't have a life. Liberal, socialist Democrats do not have a life outside of trying to take over what has been given them. If they suddenly find themselves in power, they want more power. They want as much power as they want. And with Biden, he doesn't want to be president. He wants to be king of this nation. He wants to be able to say, I am the one who did all of this. I am the one who's got America going the direction that I want it to go, not the direction that it was founded to go. Kamala Harris is exactly the same kind of thing. She wants to be in charge. And that's the only time her life makes any sense. That's the only time that Michelle Lujan Grisham, the Wicked Witch of the North out here in Santa Fe, it's the only time that their lives make any sense is when they're in charge, when they're doing exactly what they were born to be. Kings and rulers and queens of this nation, where the people have to do exactly what they say or the people will be in trouble, put in prison. There are still people from January 6th that are still in jail over what happened there when it has been proven over and over again that it wasn't the media has said. It wasn't a complete insurrection. It was not. The only insurrection was the stuff that the Democrats people did to make everybody think it was Trump who caused all of this. It wasn't. And if you listen to places like CNN, which I had talked about before, you don't know what the truth is because CNN doesn't know what the truth is. Period. MSNBC doesn't know what the truth is. NBC, ABC, CBS doesn't know what the truth is. Fox News still follows along with some of this stuff, but they do push some of the good stuff. They do have Tucker Carlson. They do have Sean Hannity, Mark Levin. These are things that we have to listen to. You know, people who know what America was founded for, what America was founded as. We were not founded as a monarchy. We were never meant to be a monarchy, but that is the direction the left is leading us to. That is the direction the Democrats want us to go because they want to be part of a monarchy. They want to be the leaders of this country forever. And that's why they cheated the way they did in 2020. That's why they cheated the way they did in Arizona. And yes, I don't think that Kerry Lake lost, but because we don't have the judges and the people in power who actually would do the right thing to have the backbone to do it, next time we see Kerry Lake will probably be as a vice president or something like that, even though she's still fighting for her rights as, you know, that she won that election. She did. Just like Biden didn't win his election, if you would just look at what was going on, you'd know. Trump had tens of thousands of people at his rallies. Biden was lucky if he had 100. And not 100,000, 100. Period. That's all there is to it, folks. We are now running out of time. I have to thank Sarge for coming in. He made this show absolutely wonderful, and I hope that he does this again. But we are in the process now of winding down this show. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of the things that you know, thank for all of the people who have listened and who will listen to this show in the archives. God bless you all. God bless America. And I'll see you next week. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week with the next episode of NWCR Radio, where we work hard to let you know what America has in store and what the Constitution and our laws have to say about it. Stay tuned.
bless you all.
I know you're going to
I got plays again for you. I know you're going to hear it.
What's he doing? Oh, he's begging.